looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Yours, mine, theirs.
Hey everybody, welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, a podcast about movies, a podcast about voting, a podcast about awards, a podcast about talking, and a podcast about Charles Bronson, of course. Hi, I'm John, and now that you know my real name, I'm gonna need to shoot ya. Please email me your physical address at yoursmindtheirspodcast@gmail.com, and we'll take care of that.
Hiya, pal. I'm Roy, and there are three men in this podcast. One man who wants to have it, one man who wants to love it, and one man who wants to kill it.
Hey, I'm Mark, you snot-licking donkey fart. If you dinosaur dork fart brains haven't seen any Bronson flicks, then what are you living for?
Nice, beautiful. I'm glad we got the Bronson in there. And Roy, you stole my idea of just plugging your nose to do the Bronson voice. So
yeah, that's exactly what you happened.
Okay, so anyway, this is Yours, Mine, and Theirs. We're welcoming back our guest, Mark. You just heard him. And we are talking about three Charles Bronson movies. I'm not sure how that came about, but I'm not regretting it in the slightest. Maybe the slightest, just the slightest bit of regret. But most of all, it's non-regret. It's like, it's only, like, I don't know, 12% slight and 82% non-regret. We're talking Charles Bronson movies. Once Upon a Time in the West, Red Sun, and Murphy's Law, spanning three decades. Yeah, that's what we got going. That's what you're going to have to strap yourselves in for. And you better be ready, brother. All right. Anything we should talk about before we get into the movies? I don't want to get right into it. We should really chat a little bit.
Yeah, so these three movies are so fantastic because it's like from, what, 1968 to 1986. But I swear, in Once Upon a Time in the West, he already looks like he's 65 years old.
Yeah.
And then by the time you get to Murphy's Law, it looks like someone pulled him out of the clothes hamper.
It feels like, well, I don't know. I mean, to me, it feels like all three of these movies were filmed in a day. And when I say all three of these movies were filmed in a day, I mean he filmed all three of these movies in one day.
In the same day.
in 1968 or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I think we're fans. I think, I'm not a Charles Bronson guy, but it was kind of nice to see three different versions of Charles Bronson for sure.
Yeah. So if we want to chat, we're doing this podcast today because Mark is decided to, that he's allowed to go on vacation to Cancun. So tomorrow, Mark is leaving us.
Yeah.
No longer.
Please come back.
Yeah. What can we talk about? I haven't been to a beach in, well, a year, I guess, now that I think about it. How long are you going to be gone? What are you going to be doing?
It's a relatively short trip. So we're leaving tomorrow morning and we're getting back Sunday evening. The entire time I'm just going to be beachside. So I grew up right by the beach, and when I moved up to San Antonio, that's what I missed the most. Like, I don't really miss my hometown, but I miss the beach. And like, that's the one thing I want to do. I just want to throw myself out by the shore and just listen to the water. And I know I sound like I'm 70, but that's really what I want to do, man. Like, I'm just, I need to get out of here and just experience water.
I think there's something about, there's something human about the rhythm and the zen of hearing waves. And I think possibly every human being needs to just be on a beach when there are waves nearby, just as a form of meditation, you know?
So I'm a Utah boy, so there's always been kind of this me standing up for the mountains, right? Like, I'd rather live near the mountains than the ocean, and the mountains are pretty spectacular, but the ocean is pretty special. And so every time I see the ocean, I kind of think of that scene in Blast from the Past where Brendan Fraser, who's lived in a bomb shelter for 30 years, sees the Pacific Ocean for the first time. And so I don't know, it's something. Mark, you're gonna have a great time, so enjoy yourself.
I hope so.
I don't remember that.
Eat all you can eat. When they try to tell you five meals before lunch, it doesn't count as all you can eat. You tell them to shut up and bring you some food.
That's all I plan on doing, just eating and just watching the waves.
Okay.
Yeah, aren't you? Are you gonna go to Cancun after all?
I think next summer. My wife really wants to. Yeah.
I'll let you know what this resort's all about.
My wife and I did sandals in Jamaica a couple years ago.
Nice.
And I thought we're going to eat so much, and we ended up eating 3 meals a day at the appointed times. And then like halfway through the trip, we started spending an hour in the gym every morning because we were getting so fat.
But, yeah, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to get fat. I don't care.
Wow.
Although according to Bushido or whatever it's called, it came out in the Red Sun. Toshino Mifune said that according to that doctrine, a big belly means you have a slow brain. And I took offense to that, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, geez.
I took offense to it. Damn, Jeff.
Okay.
So my way of life.
I don't know. I'm so close. I'm on that razor's edge of just giving up forever. Like, I keep telling myself that I'm going to get back into shape, but there's also a part of me that's like, think how freeing it would be just to say screw it and go eat all the Twinkies that are downstairs.
Well,
I think that happened when I was like 32 and everything started to hurt. I'm like, you know what, yeah, man? Enough of this.
I've already hit the cycle, right, where it's I think everybody eventually gets to this cycle where they're really depressed because they're so fat, and the only thing that makes them feel good is like a tube of Pringles or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I need to feel better about my fatness. I need to eat these. Yeah.
Give us the Pringles.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
all right.
We're all fat.
Hey, come see us fat live in a few weeks.
Oh, yeah. Should we talk about that now?
Yeah,
we don't have to. We can talk about it later.
Okay. Well, July 1st, everybody. If you can come, I kind of don't think. I thought there were going to be a lot of people there, but we timed it perfectly with gas prices, so I can't anticipate anybody like flying in. Really.
You know? Well, you got Richard, who is flying in for that, which is. The dedication is astonishing. So I mean,
did he we'll have that. Say I think he was flying in for sure?
I think, well, he said 100% he's coming.
Wow.
So is Andy flying or driving? That's still a heck of a drive if he's driving.
It's yeah. cheaper if he flies.
Yeah, probably.
Like, I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to, I'm not sure. Like, Andy said he was coming, but again.
Phil and Mickey have committed to coming.
Yeah, you're just saying that. You're trying to will it in. Okay, we shouldn't say this. But anyway, we're talking about the Yours, Mine, and Theirs live event. That's going to be, oh boy, 2 podcasts from now, apparently.
But only 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks away. It's at the Post Theater at the University of Utah. We're comfortable saying this out loud to you who are listening right now because we trust you. But it's July 1st, and it's pretty much all day. We'll probably be recording the podcast at like 7 p.m., but we're going to be watching all the movies before then. And the one you might want to be there for is The Fugitive at 5 o'clock. We figured that's the one you're going to want to see. But we're also watching Vertigo and Clue. So write that information down. It's July 1st. We'll probably mention it again later. Let's mention it again later. Okay. Let's talk about the movies. The first movie is a movie called Once Upon a Time in the West, which, as I mentioned off-air with you guys, is a movie that I had not seen. It's a Sergio Leone movie. It's a classic. It's a big, huge thing. And it is...
Big, huge runtime.
Quite something. Big, huge runtime. Yeah. Huge runtime. It's girthy. Girthy movie.
It's girthy. <yeah.
laughs> It's the longest movie we've seen for this podcast in a while.
Right. Well, I wondered... It's very similar, of course, to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is one of the first ones we watched.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, I guess it depends on which version you watch, because there are several versions of both movies, but I'm not sure exactly which one's longer.
Well, I assume you guys watched the 165-minute version.
When you say you guys, you must include yourself, right?
I watched the 2-hour, 45-minute version.
Of Once Upon a Time in the West?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's the one I watched. Because that's the one that was available. Like, how did we watch this again? What was it?
I hear the abridged version kind of sucks.
I've heard it's a huge failure. It doesn't make sense. It's like one of those... It's like, Sergio Leone is one of those people. It's like... usually, you know, when you trim stuff down, it actually makes it leaner and better, but apparently it doesn't work with him. But also, you kind of watch the big long ones, and you're kind of like... Does this need to be here? I don't know. I mean, does everything need to be there? But, well, we'll get through it. Okay, the thing is, Charles Bronson plays a guy who has a harmonica. And you'd think a lot of people would get away from him, you know, because he's this really good gunfighter, but he has this habit of just, like, giving himself away by blowing a harmonica whenever he's close by. So you, if you hear that harmonica, yeah, you better get out of there, brother.
How many times in this movie does he almost get shot in the face?
Oh, gosh.
Like, oh, I think, way too many.
117.
Like, what's her... Jill, like, shoots a match out of his hand in the dark, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, he's hanging out. He's meeting someone. He wants to have a business meeting with a guy named Frank. But Frank sends his three associates, and what does he do? He shoots him. I shot him. He shoots them all. And so it's like, okay, what's going on here? And another guy, this Frank guy that he was supposed to meet, he goes and shoots up this little homestead. So pretty much murders a family. And you think he might spare the kid. He does not spare the kid. He murders the kid. And so he takes over this town, and he's in disguise. He's dressed as – he's cosplaying as one of the brown coats from Firefly. but it turns out he is wearing the gang colors of another guy named Cheyenne. And it took me a minute to recognize, but oh my gosh, that's Jason Robards as Cheyenne.
It is. It sure is. Yes,
holy is. Cow.
they're trying to pass him off as a Mexican guy.
I guess. Yeah.
Come on, Hollywood.
he's that guy. And so very similar to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, in my opinion. They're all kind of circling around each other. This harmonica kid is trying to get after Frank, but there are several situations where he saves Frank's life, and Frank is kind of being a renegade because turns out he was hired by some railroad guy to intimidate those homesteaders because the railroad, I think, wants them out of the way so they don't have to pay them for, you know, station rights or whatever they were trying to do there. But Frank wanted to take that over for himself. And there is some kind of clause in some kind of contract somewhere, in some business somewhere, that if they don't have the town done in time, then the train doesn't pay them. And so anyway, let me just cut to it. 3 hours later, the woman who is the widow of the guy who was murdered, she manages to kind of finish up the town, but she wants to auction it off. But the harmonica guy kind of helps her out, and the Cheyenne guy kind of helps her out because the Cheyenne guy is kind of being framed, sort of.
She didn't want to auction off
She was made.
Her land. She got raped into auctioning off her land.
Oh, yeah, that happens, I guess. Okay, but they raise the money.
Do you recognize her, by the way? I'm sorry.
I don't recognize her.
It's a gulp.
Oh, what? Like from
it's Claudia Cardinale from Eight and a Half.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God, no.
That's
yep. I never put one and one together.
Nice.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Well, anyway, she makes it out okay because Frank and Cheyenne, or not Frank and Cheyenne, Harmonica and Cheyenne team up against Frank, even though they could have shot him about 20 other times during the course of the movie. And Cheyenne is kind of happy-go-lucky. I'm kind of confused because Jason Robards is like, hey, this guy is framing me and my men, so I'm kind of going to go after him. But he's sort of happy about it. But also he loses, I don't know, roughly 30 of his men in the process of you know, the plot of this movie. And ultimately his own life as well. Like, he gets shot.
He gets shot by the gimp.
Yeah,
the railroad owner, the Frank tries to double cross the railroad owner, and then the railroad owner tries to double cross Frank, and then that guy ends up shooting a Robards,
right?
Because Robards dared to dream a little dream.
So anyway, Charles Bronson and Henry Fonda, the good guy kind of and the bad guy, pretty much definitely, they just kind of, it all comes down to the draw that they have. at the end. And, of course, Charles Bronson wins the draw. Henry Fonda's a really, really bad guy in this one. He dies. Cheyenne dies. And that's mostly how the movie ends. In the middle of all that, there's all this stuff going down about, like, because one thing they do is Harmonica and Cheyenne, like, have this little kind of ploy to raise the $5,000 they need to win the auction. And so they auction off, they do a Chewbacca ploy, right? they put Cheyenne in manacles and, you know, they send him off to the bounty hunters and they get the $5,000 they need, because that's exactly how much he's wanted for, because he's a bad guy. And they get that money. And then Cheyenne just, I don't know if I love this or hate this. I think I kind of love it. Cheyenne just shows up later. Like, okay, he got put into the authorities, but then he shows up later. Like, Cheyenne escapes the authorities just randomly, like, three different times.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if I, like blinked during the scene where he escapes, because he just shows up, and I guess we just assume that he escaped.
That's everybody. There are some weird superpowers in this set of movies. And Cheyenne's superpower is that he's the escapist. Yeah, he can always get away from authorities. So, so that's, I skipped a ton. That's Once Upon a Time in the West. Mark, you've seen this before. Roy, you haven't. First and second impressions of it?
So one of the things between Frank and Harmonica is throughout the movie, Frank says, "Who are you?" And Harmonica keeps giving him names of people that Frank has killed, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the movie, when they are getting ready for their final showdown, Frank says, "Are you going to tell me who you are?" And Harmonica says, "Not to the point of dying." And then after Harmonica wins the duel, you see some flashbacks, and we learn that Harmonica, the Frank, did this really cruel thing where he was hanging Harmonica's older brother, but his feet were on top of Harmonica's shoulders, you know, basically forcing Harmonica to, when he gives out of exhaustion, to kill his own brother. And then what does Frank say? He stuffs the harmonica in his mouth and says something like, you know, this will keep your brother happy for a while. And then, of course, at the end of the movie, Harmonica shoves the harmonica into Frank's mouth as he's dying.
Weird amount of sadism in this, yeah.
Big impression for me in this movie is this movie, like we said, is 2 hours and 45 minutes long, right? Mm-hmm. So when we were watching Moonfall, I was checking the clock like every 20 minutes, and I was like, I can't believe there's still an hour and 40 minutes left in this movie or whatever, right? So in this movie, I thought that was going to happen at some point. And it's interesting because this movie is deliberately very slowly paced. Mm-hmm. Like, the opening credits takes 10 minutes, and I swear nine of it is us watching a fly on some guy's face.
Yeah.
Like, there's a 9 minute see of that scene of wondering if the fly is going to go in the guy's mouth or not. So this movie is paced really slowly. And then at some point in this movie, I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm going to check the runtime, and I swear I'm not even a third of the way into this film. And when I checked the runtime, there was 35 minutes left. Hmm. So this film, even though it's really long and it paces really slowly, I guess I didn't feel that drag at any point. It moved along, again, it kept me engaged. So
something can be said for like so few things happening that you think it only took 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's what makes this one of the greatest Westerns ever, because
it
is, once you check the runtime, it's like forever and a day, but you don't feel it. Like, you buy into what's going on so much. And there's like all these great character actors that show up, even if it's like for 5 seconds and then they die. Like Jack Elam, like with the flies in his face, like he's awesome as a heavy, but he's only there for like the opening 10 minutes and then he gets blown away. And then, like, all these other characters show up. The name of that dude from Heart to Heart? Lionel Stander. He's cool in the 5 minutes he's in there. Like, there's just so much in this happening in this movie that's really done so well that it just kind of sucks you in and you don't worry about the time. But, you know, the one thing. Like, I remember watching this movie when I was a kid and loving it. And I've seen this a gazillion times. I love this movie. But, you know, as I've gotten older and I experience new things and I see things in a different way, like, this movie, as much as I still love it, like, it makes me feel so uncomfortable, man.
Oh, man.
It's just so weird how, like, time does that to you. Like, how things change and, like, the things that you remember loving so much. And granted, I still love this movie. I mean, I do recognize that there's some stuff in here that's like, whoa, okay. Like, wow. All right. So
we should talk about it. So I will say, like you mentioned with the characters that are great characters that show up for 5 minutes. So like Frank's gang at the train station, like when they were all killed, I was like, well, there goes half of the cast that I had. Right. But so the scene, right. And the problem with the scene, I mean, it's uncomfortable enough to watch a rape scene in a movie, but this is one of those ones where it's like, if you rape someone long enough, eventually they're going to get into it.
Yeah. They'll love right? you for it.
But, yeah. It's just like, yeah.
That must be why I distanced myself when I was summing up the movie from that scene.
Thanks for letting us do the heavy lifting.
Yeah,
John.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys be the heavies.
And then there's like towards the end when Cheyenne's leaving, and he gives her some advice. And he's like, go out there and give the men some water. Let them look at you. And if one of them pats you on the behind, don't give it no, never mind. They've earned it. And I'm like, okay.
Take that, me too.
Enjoy sexual harassment and assault.
Yeah.
So obviously that was the norm of the day, right? Like, I don't know if he was being sexist himself or he's just letting her know this is the world that you're about to get to dive into. And I'm giving you a head start in what you need to know. Like, you can't change this behavior. Just pretend it's not. What does he tell her when he slaps her butt? Like, you go on and pretend it didn't happen or like something like that.
Something,
right?
Yeah, it's something like that. I feel like because she was.
I don't think he's being a perv. Like, I'm probably reading this wrong, but I don't think he's being a perv. I think he's letting her know this is what's coming. You might as well get used to it now. And I'm being a friend of sorts.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going full nasty. Like, I'm just showing you what's coming and just steel yourself up for this behavior.
Okay, because she was a prostitute back in Louisiana or wherever
right.
she came
yes,
from.
Yes, New Orleans,
like,
yeah.
She secretly married that guy. Although, I do want to say, you know, she says, oh, we got married 10 days ago before he came out here. I don't know. What do you guys think of the theory that that's just something she said in order to get the homestead? Oh,
like she can't prove it. She's like,
yeah.
No, I swear you were
married. Yeah.
No, I think they did. I think they did because that one dude at the beginning tells the kid, go pick up your mother. And the kid's like, my mother died. And then he gets punched in the face. Like, I think it did happen. I don't know. Was this a mail order bride situation? I don't know.
It kind of seems. I think they knew each other. Well,
he was in New Orleans.
Yeah, he was a tourist in New Orleans.
He enjoyed. Yeah, he enjoyed her bordello and enjoyed it enough that he proposed.
Yeah, and you know maybe he was like, okay, well, just in case me and my family get slaughtered, maybe we should get married before I head back, so that you can enact revenge on whoever. Whoever killed me because the railroad's back. Okay, but I kind of thought that whole thing that Jason Robards says to her is something kind of like, okay, you were a prostitute and you made people pay for this kind of stuff, but, you know, wouldn't it be, I don't know, more kind and Christ-like if you just let people have their way with you?
Christ-like.
Oh, man. No, they've earned it.
Yeah,
nothing says Christ-like like being slapped in the butt.
Yeah, they're
oh my God,
they're good diggers. They're good diggers, Marge. So I thought that was a little bit weird.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys noticed that this movie is based on a story written by Dario Argento.
I did notice that,
which is just fantastic.
And
Asia's father.
You know
Asia Argento, right?
Asia, that's right.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Bourdain's last lady.
That's right, Anthony Bourdain's lady.
Oh, I didn't
lady.
Know that.
Yeah, and there was another writer, I think, who's famous. Who was that?
Well, I think it was co-written by Sergio Leone. So the screenplay was by Sergio Leone, and Dario Argento wrote the story. But I think Dario Argento and Sergio Leone co-wrote the story. And then Leone turned into a screenplay with the help of Sergio Donati.
Donati. Okay, yeah, no, that's not someone I know. But yeah, it is kind of, well, I'll mention this later. We'll talk about
that later. So an interesting part of this movie, right, is that, if you read some of the information, the background information of this movie, I guess the idea was that Jill would be the main character, right? Like, she is the center of the plot. Did it feel that way to you guys? Like, did they succeed in making her the center of this film?
I wouldn't say so. She's the center of the movie poster, I noticed.
That's true.
And like, her name is above all the other names. So I kind of think that that's what it looks like on paper, because everything is revolving around her. But ultimately, what was filmed is sort of the, you know, kind of the pissing match that we see in the Dollars trilogy, stuff like that. Still, it's just a very masculine movie, and it's seeping over the testosterone is kind of seeping over the edges.
Yeah.
So, way to try feminism, Leone. I'm a lousy judge of feminism. Everybody knows that. But I would say I could, now that you mention it, I could kind of see that it was attempted but failed, at least in that direction.
Mm.
I mean, it was the Old West, so I mean, you can only go so far with that. I don't think the Old West is known for being kind to women.
Well, it definitely isn't. No, it's not. And I mean, and this is all subjective. It's just a matter, it's just a matter of our own opinions. But I still think that the movie is not like making a judgment call and not like critiquing that and not reckoning with that. And it is a little bit more about, hey, let's indulge in, machismo behavior. And that's what it's about, rather than kind of making a judgment call about like what life was like.
Oh, most definitely. This is totally men taking care of men things in a manly fashion.
And I don't want to say like every movie should be this way. But I think you could, like, if you wanted to, like, well, I think he wanted to. I think maybe if he had more of a consultant, then it very easily could have taken place in the Old West. Nevertheless, it could have been about her and about what she's up against and what she's standing against, and been a critique of macho behavior rather than, an indulgence of it.
However, it was made in 1968. Yeah. I think these movies were made to reinforce macho behavior.
Yeah.
So what – so – I because I know you're not a huge John Wayne fan, because would you rather watch another John Wayne Western or another Charles Bronson Western?
Definitely another Charles Bronson Western. Yeah. The reason is because we've watched three John Wayne Westerns and two Charles Bronson Westerns. So I just to make it even.
So there's that movie Chato's Land, which looks really good, but there's a character in this movie, Once Upon a Time in the West, named Chato. So I don't know if there's supposed to be a connection. Also, it's so weird to see Charles Bronson without a mustache.
Yeah,
and he's in his 40s in this movie, but he looks like his face has been baking in the sun for 80 years.
Yeah.
He looks like walking human leather.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He does, man.
Okay. Well, anyway, Once Upon a Time in the West. It's it flies by, but also it has an undercurrent of sadness regarding the Jill character. But also, it's wicked awesome because it's three dudes shooting each other. So I don't. That's my summary.
Yeah.
And also, Henry Fonda, man, like, come on.
I love it when actors play against types so well, right? He makes a great villain in this film.
He broke bad in a big way, man. And he's so freaking effective. Like, you really hate this guy.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, he is okay, yeah. I really dislike him because it's like, oh man, do you have to be that evil? But then it's weird. And I don't know if this is a Charles Bronson thing, but then we watch two other movies where there is just so much more crazy violence and hurt than I was expecting. Like, strangely enough.
Oh, man. So the movie where I was expecting, like, the total bloodbath was Murphy's Law. And Charles hardly gets to clean any house at all in that movie. But the finale is pretty strong. But anyway, between now and then, we've got Red Sun. You guys ready to talk Red Sun?
Let's go Red Sun.
All right, Red Sun.
Okay, so this is a pre-make of Shanghai Noon. So, I mean, I could sum it up that way, really. And it's not just that the two movies are similar. Shanghai Noon absolutely was spoofing this film. Because the plots are so darn similar. I mean, it starts out with Charles Bronson's character or Owen Wilson's character robbing a train. And then Charles Bronson, Owen Wilson's character getting betrayed by his gang.
I was really amazed because Charles Bronson is, quote, the good guy of this movie.
Yeah.
But
he's the gray guy.
Well, there's like, I was really blown away, and this is what I'm talking about. During that train robbery scene, you know, before the moment that you're about to talk about, there are parts where, like, Charles Bronson would knock on the door of the train and someone would say, "Who's there?" And then he'd shoot him in the face, just whoever that is. Like, that's just an event. That's just, it's like, oh, okay, we're going to take, I think, you know, especially getting these last two movies, I kind of feel like the amount of violence in these movies, and when I don't know if amount of violence is a good way to do it, but just the, you know, the depiction of violence is, I would consider it just like a little bit more, you know, like juvenile. Like, it's something that I would have, like, you know, when me and my fourth grade buddies would get around and we talk about, like, wouldn't it be awesome if he shot him in the face at this point? And it is one of those things where I'm just like nervous at this time of my life. It's like, oh my gosh, why was that decision made? You know, whereas, you know, when I was little and I didn't think anything of violence, it was a little bit easier to swallow in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
That is, well, why were we okay with violence when we were kids, but it unnerves us now?
I think
maybe it's surreal.
I hope that's a good sign.
It probably is. But so I do have the same thought in this movie as the movie unfolds, and I'm like, oh my gosh, please let us continue to cheer for you by not being like too evil, right? During the course of the train robbery, he kills 13 children. So, man, he probably shouldn't have done that. But
yeah.
Probably.
So anyway, he stands up and he's like, "Hey, folks, you know what this is? It's a Wild West show. It's called a train robbery. Now give me your money, pal." So, but anyway, that on board this train is also ambassador from Japan, and they're delivering a fancy sword to the government in the United States. And what was the guy's name? Ghosh, right? Ghosh, who's supposed to be Link. That's right. His name is Link. He's supposed to be Link's friend, but he's not. He steals the sword. So, I mean, in Shanghai Noon, they steal the princess. It's the same thing. He steals the sword. And he
sword
leaves.
Princess.
Yeah. He leaves Link for dead, but Link is not dead, friend. And so the prime minister or whatever, the ambassador from Japan, was being guarded by two samurai. Ghosh kills one of them, and the other one is Toshiro Mifune, who looks pretty good clean-shaven. And so he takes Link and he says, "Together we're going to go hunt him down and get the sword back." He has a set amount of time to do it, 7 days. If he can't do it in 7 days, he's got to kill himself, and he has to kill Link, so that's nice. So we've kind of got like this situation where it's Shanghai Noon. They don't want to be together, but they're stuck together.
Yeah.
Whether they like it or not. They go to a town where there's a bordello. There's lots of bordellos. This one, I think, is called the Hotel Maxine. And we're there because Ghosh is eventually going to come visit his girl. Apparently it's been 10 days and that's a long time for a man. That is what Ursula Andress tells us. What's her name in this film? Christina?
Yes, Christina.
Christina. So anyway, I think the motivation here for Link is he wants all the money, or his share of the money from the train robbery. And of course, is his name Kuroba?
Kuroba.
Yeah, he just wants his sword and revenge back. And so there's this problem because Kuroba wants to kill Ghosh, and Link says, "You can't kill him because I need to make him show me where the money is." Anyway,
there's a lot of money on that train.
There's a lot of money. It's in a cave. Link's never going to see it. When they finally do meet up with Ghosh, They have to fight a common enemy, which is those filthy, savage Comanches, right? Thank heavens that we have those dirty Indians to be a common enemy. So they kill a whole bunch of Comanches, and then at the very end, after the Comanches are taken care of, Kuroba has an opportunity to kill Ghosh, but he remembers his promise made while freezing with only his samurai underwear on, that he wouldn't kill Ghosh. And while he hesitates, Ghosh turns around and kills him. And then Link finally sort of does the right thing, right? And he just kills Ghosh instead of, like, taking him to get the money. So I guess he saves a little honor there somehow.
Yeah, it's the honor that's saved. It's kind of, I mean, if I mean, it's a little too late, right? No one gets what they want. A bunch of people die.
It's compromise, but it's the worst kind of compromise.
Right.
Most people are dead and no one gets what they want.
It's the compromise where Ghosh is killed 5 minutes after he should have been killed.
Yep.
And he takes, like, a bunch more, like, main characters with him.
Yeah.
Including, like, the honorable person. I mean, that's... It's weird to see a movie, I guess, in the 70s like this. If this movie were made today, it just seems like there's no way that Toshiro Mifune would die. Yeah. You know? Because you're watching it, and you're like, he does not deserve to die.
He's the only good character in the film, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Link Hawk turns the sword. He delivers it on time. Which is a good thing, because otherwise Kuroba would have had to have killed himself. Oh, never mind. It doesn't matter anymore.
Doesn't matter. So that's a time saver.
Yeah. Well, they get their sword anyway, so. But that is the movie. What do you guys think of this movie? So there's a lot of walking in this movie.
Yeah. Kind of a Fellowship of the Ring vibe, I guess. I will say... okay, because I don't know about you guys, but I rented it on Apple TV.
Yeah,
because actually, it's the only way to see it, from what I could tell. Yeah. And one thing Apple TV does that Amazon doesn't do is it says the, it just has a quick line that says, "Oh, here's the Rotten Tomato rating of this movie. Rotten Tomato rating on this is 40%. I'm like, oh boy. Yeah. It's a Western. It's Charles Bronson. It's the 70s. It's a movie I've never heard of, even though I picked it. It's going to be kind of this dumb little bit. And I must say, for most of the movie, I was like, this is pretty great.
No way.
Yeah.
No, I enjoyed most of it. Yeah.
But I think the reason it's not very well received is just okay, because I think I've kind of mentioned this. Did I mention this on social media? I probably just told you, right? But I like the idea. It's like, okay, there's this American guy and there's this Japanese guy, and they're both going after a French guy, or at least a French actor. You know, it's like this, you know, international cast. It's like, who's going to win? USA, Japan, France, you know,
Switzerland.
It's going to come down to them. But then ultimately what it is at the very end is like, we all have to team up and kill Comanches. And that's it. It's like, fortunately, you know, and I don't know where this movie was produced, but I kind of feel like by 1971, there's just kind of like a reevaluation. I'm sounding like some kind of PC scholar person this podcast. Yeah, this isn't usually
you're awful,
I am, right? But so, but I was totally thinking that. It's like, it's almost like they had to have the Indians ride in just to have some cannon fodder. It's like, okay, we can all agree we got to kill the Indians. And that's ultimately what they do. And I think the movie was so much more interesting before that happened.
So if you want to know, Charles Bronson obviously is American. Then you've got Japanese, Toshiro Mifune. Alain Delon is French. Ursula Andress is Swiss. It was filmed in Spain. The director was British.
Oh, right. Terrence Young directed this.
Yeah. Yes. Terrence Young did.
From Russia with Love, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's a big James Bond.
John Huston, who's a big Western guy, considered this one of the three greatest Westerns of all time, along with Stagecoach.
Insane.
Yeah, Stagecoach, Red River, and Red Sun, which is just astonishing that someone would make that judgment that those are the three greatest Westerns.
This is the first East meets West Western.
Yeah. There you go.
almost as good as The Last Samurai, which I've never
seen. Sure.
Charles Bronson shot this movie while also shooting Chaito's Land, so it's like simultaneous. So
that's this is the
IMDb facts.
The apex mountain of Charles Bronson, shooting all these movies at the same time, getting it done. So
I will say, like, his voice in this movie is peak Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful just listening to everything he says in this movie. So it's got that going for it.
Yeah. It's great, especially after watching 3 hours of Once Upon a Time in the West. It's great to actually hear him talk. It's like, oh yeah, I wanted to have a conversation with you this whole time, Bronson.
Oh, also, like, there's a scene where Bronson takes off his shirt, and he's probably in his late 40s in this movie, maybe early 50s, but he is really fit.
Yeah, he's fit,
and he gets in a super nice jump kick. Which anytime Charles Bronson can jump kick someone, I'm in for that. So
He's got the ultimate jump kick in Murphy's Law. Oh,
yeah, he does.
Yeah.
But like, so I'm not crazy about this movie because I think, I don't know if it was the intention of Charles Bronson or the director, but they tried to really make him like the funny foil throughout the movie, and I'm not sure it worked.
Yeah,
it's not Charles Bronson, man. Like, that's not, you don't go to a Charles Bronson movie to see him act the fool. Like, you see him to come kick some butt, man. Like, to clean house, and he does clean house for the first 5 minutes, and then it's nothing until the Indians come in.
I don't know.
And by the way, those were all European actors in brown face. Like, that really annoys me. I'm like, y'all don't even look Indian. I'm offended by that alone.
So I don't.
But like, I just think this movie was the most un-Bronson-like movie of all the Bronson movies we saw.
So I don't know if most of them were Indians, but he ended up killing 14 people in this movie.
Oh my god!
Of the three movies we watched, this is the one where he kills the most people. That's probably includes the 12 the 12 infants on the train.
I mean, but do you credit all those infants dying at his hand? His gang took out like half of them, so I'm not going to give them all 12. I don't know. Your numbers are not right.
Are suspicious. I'm not. He didn't kill any infants on the train. But so this is just.
No, mean, but like of all the people, like you can give him credit for like killing two people, maybe.
No, he had his 14. Gang bitter. He was his gun was responsible for 14 deaths in this film.
You counted them?
I counted them.
I should have done that. Right.
Yeah, if you want to know, in what do you call it? In Once Upon a Time in the West, I have a final count. I think it's 7 or 8. I think. Let me pull this up. 7.
It just seems like he killed a lot more in Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
All right. I trust you.
So, like, one thing that was really impressive is how fast Toshiro Mifune can create a fire break with his katana. Like, he cleared, like, 4 acres.
Like, we could have used that dude when I was a migrant worker. That dude would have cleared beanie fields like crazy.
So what do you think of Ursula Andress in this film? I mean, she's kind of your – she's from Dr. No, and she's like this European beauty of an actress. But how does she work in this film? Does she work in this film? Does she work in this film as well or better than Claudia Cardinale did in Once Upon a Time in the West? I don't think she's as good.
Oh, shut up. She's the only thing I like about this movie.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, no, she's awesome because, like, she's not your typical, like, you would think that she's going to fall in love with Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
But she's squarely in love with the villain, and she's going to give it her all and do everything for the villain. Even at the very end, when, like, it's clear that the villain would probably kill her to save his own life, she's all upset that Charles Bronson kills him. She's like, you bastard! Hey, why'd you do this? But, you know, then again, I don't know if she's upset that Charles Bronson killed her man or that she killed her man. Now they don't have the money that she's been promised. Either way, that makes her a great character. Holy crap.
Well, I agree with Mark. I think I like Ursula Andress in that I kind of like hating her, you know? Like, I don't like her. And it's like one of those things where I was kind of like, when is she going to make out with Charles Bronson? When is she going to switch guys and realize that Charles Bronson is the good guy of the two? Even though it really came down to just whoever got to the betrayal at the train first, you know? Like, it could very easily have been Toshiro Mifune and Alain Delon if Charles Bronson just if he double-crossed Alain Delon first. And so, you know, really, I don't know, there wasn't too much of a difference in the men, but she just loved that one, and she just loved the one who was just a little bit worse, you know? And
a little Frenchier.
So, yeah, and so it's kind of fun to see, and it's kind of weird. It's like she's, you know, she's great. She's Honey Rider from Dr. No and everything. But also, she had a streak, right? And as attractive as she is, it's like, oh, I was mostly thinking about how much of a streak she had and how angry she could get, you know? Yeah. So that was kind of fun for that reason. So
that nasty streak is what did it for me. Like, I really like that side of her. Like, yeah, she's gorgeous and everything, but I like that, you know, much like Henry Fonda plays against type, like she did that for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she's the one thing I really enjoyed in this movie. I like her feistiness.
So I loved Toshiro Mifune in this movie. I thought he was fine.
He's cool. Yeah, he's cool. But I thought he was like really, really subdued throughout.
So
like, I wanted more of Toshiro Mifune.
So he's not going to make my best actor list because I feel like he kind of played one note throughout the film, right?
Yes, yes. Right.
But so my understanding is he doesn't speak English. So if IMDb's not lying, like he phonetically did this film.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah.
Well, that would explain why his performance wasn't as nuanced as what we were used to. Heart.
All right. Well, we have anything more to say about the Red Sun, otherwise known as Red Sun?
I don't think so. I've got a lot of awards for Red Sun, but
wow.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. So I think I'm ready to move on. I think I'm ready to move on. I'm gonna put 5 minutes on the clock. Let's see if you can get Murphy's Law taken care of.
Oh my God. Well, I want to preface this by saying that I remember watching this movie with my grandfather. My grandfather was the biggest Charles Bronson fan, and I remember liking it as a kid. And just like when I revisited Supergirl, I don't know what the heck I was thinking. This movie's just bad.
So I feel a little better now because I'm like, Mark really likes this, and I was kind of disappointed, and I don't know if I can talk about that.
Okay. So I'll talk about it, dude, because this is horrible.
Okay.
This is so horrible. I don't remember it being this bad, but it's really bad. Anyway, first of all, Charles Bronson is like 1,000 years old by now.
Yeah, he is.
He's just old. He looks like a human cigarette butt. Like somebody smoked it to the very end and tossed it aside. That's him. That's who he is.
Oh.
And like right off the bat, Murphy, I don't even know his first name. They keep calling him Murphy.
Jack.
Charles Murphy. Jack Murphy. There we go. Sorry. And that's a big part of the movie. So Jack Murphy goes to get some groceries, and on his way out, he sees somebody stealing his car, and he says, "Hey, that's my car." I love the way he just screams, "That's my car! You can't steal that!" I'm like, no. It's Steve's M.O. not to ask for permission. Anyway, Charles Bronson runs after the car. He throws all his groceries right at the car. Like, that's going to do something.
It did do something. It made her crash.
It made her crash into a restaurant.
She crashed because she can't drive. But anyway, so he immediately pulls out his gun because that's what cops do, I guess, even in the 80s. And she crashes into the restaurant. And this 90-year-old man, we have to believe that he runs quick enough to catch up to her, corners her in an alley, arrests her. And she tells him, "I got a question to ask you." And of course, he being the good cop that he is, obliges. And then she knees him in the crotch. She asks him the question, but I'm going to keep it PG. But anyway, she knees him in the crotch, and then she runs away.
And he wakes up 5 days later from his crotch coma.
He wakes up from a crotch coma or a hangover. We're not exactly sure. And he's got to go to check out somebody who died. And he tells his partner that he had a bad night, and so that's that. Anyway, So then the scene goes to what we do see is that when he goes to his house at night, he goes to his mailbox and he sees that he's got a letter from his wife. There's a final notice for divorce. So now that we know he's a rundown cop, he's old, he's getting a divorce. So it's every cop cliche ever.
He's as close to living in a van down by the river as is possible.
Yeah, he's right about to do that. So he goes to a strip club to go visit his ex-wife because that's where his ex-wife works.
Yep.
And we thought he was like, because
I thought it was a joke.
Was like, hey, I saw your wife at the strip club. It was pretty cool. And then he punches that guy, and we thought it was just like he was just
being a jerk, right?
He was just being a jerk, and he was just saying, "Oh, does your wife work at the strip club?" But no, she does.
Yeah, he was like, just reporting. He was reporting back. That's all he was doing.
Yeah. The one cop makes fun of Jack Murphy, saying that he saw his wife's tatas, and I figured like, oh, that's an insult. Like, no, it's not an insult. Like, this actually did.
It's just accurate.
and then you know we're in that scene. We're in the strip clubs, and when we all participate in witnessing of the tatas. And then he calls her the W word because that's a running theme through all three movies.
Yeah.
All three movies have women of the night, women of nightly pleasures or whatever you want to call it.
So is it ironic that he spends all of his time in the strip club, but he like looks down on her for participating in the entertainment?
I'm like, bro, you're there. Like, why are you like, what leg do you have to stand on?
Yeah.
You know, calling her out on it if you're there. Like, whatever. But he's like the saddest patron ever. Like, everybody's enjoying and throwing money, and he's just like all sad in his table drinking his whiskey. Anyway, so he tells her off, and like he tells her like, why are you doing this? And she says that she wants to be free and live her life as a dancer. Like, they try to paint it like something nice. Anyway, so there's this other scene where there's this blonde lady who meets up with a private detective. And what I first thought was Battery Park, but then I realized that can't be because this takes place in L.A. And he has some information for her, but he tries to double-cross her. The private investigator is like, I'll give you this information, but the price just went up. And she whips out a gun right to his face. He's like, ooh, okay, forget about the price going up. Nice doing business with you. And then she makes him open up his mouth and say, ah, like a doctor. And he's like, why? And she sticks the gun in his mouth and blood splatters everywhere. I'll give this to this movie.
She cleans a lot of house.
Yeah. She cleans a lot of house. And the blood splatter is legit. Like, that's where the money went.
She has like this weird fetish where she just has to splatter blood on her face.
Yeah,
because everyone she kills, like, you see the blood splatter on her face.
I'm assuming what we didn't see though is before she killed him, her taking pictures of him to put in her book of remembrance.
Oh, that's true.
Evidence. Yeah. Remember evidence. That's going to be really fortunate later on.
This is what's going to convict me if I ever get caught. So then we go back to a scene where Charles Bronson or Jack Murphy is at a grocery store because he has to rebuy the groceries he threw at the car. And he hears a voice, and lo and behold, it's the crotch kicker. So he sees her, she sees him, and she bolts, and he chases her like Usain Bolt, and he chases her into a bathroom. And so –
oh, that's 5 minutes. You got a little – get some overage. Go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, like, he arrests her and takes her to jail, and she calls him all these insults. The juvenile insults in this movie is impressive. Uh-huh. It's like they hired a 12-year-old and told the kid, give me every insult you can think of. We're going to work it into this movie.
Yes.
60% of them involve snot.
Yeah, they're all snot and vomit is like the constant with this person. Anyway, he arrests her, takes her to jail. And he goes back to the strip club, calls his wife a lady of the night, and calls her lover a pimp, like it's some kind of insult. And he gets thrown out of the strip club. And so he's in his car, and we see a hand with a gun smack in the back of the head. And the next thing we know is that Jack Murphy's gun is used to kill his ex-wife and the pimp. And he is somehow transported to his house. He wakes up to cops banging the door in his house, and they say, hey, we know it's you. You killed your ex-wife and her lover. And he's like, what? Not me. I didn't do this. So he gets thrown into the slammer. And who's in the slammer? That girl, Arabelle. And, of course, for whatever reason, they pair him up with her. They cuff him to Arabelle, and he gets her all angry by insulting her, and she throws out juvenile insults. They start getting to a fight. Cop goes into the jail cell. He punches that cop, takes the keys, and locks him to the jail cell. And here comes the – this is what sets the movie in motion. Jack Murphy's on the run with Arabelle. She doesn't want to be with him, but he's taking her quasi-hostage, I guess. They go up to the building. He sees a helicopter. He tells her he used to fly a helicopter in Vietnam, so it's the same thing. They get in the stupid helicopter. They escape. Helicopter runs out of fuel. They land on a barn. The barn is owned by some cartel people for whatever reason. And there's another rape scene because, of course, it's the Bronson movie. It's required. So things get kind of weird. And the reason it gets kind of weird is because they punch Jack Murphy. He loses consciousness. She's screaming her head off. But then he wakes, and being Charles Bronson, he starts kicking butt. He grabs the gun. He starts cleaning house. I think he kills four people, right, in that one scene?
He doesn't kill anyone in the barn, I don't think.
No, yes, he does.
I don't.
I swear to God.
Oh, I don't think he does.
I don't think he does. No.
I think they get the drop on him. They take one of the shotguns, and they all back away, and the barn guys are like,
I thought he killed, like, at least a couple people.
Well, so that would be murder, right, if he killed them in the barn?
Well, yeah. The murder happens later. You might be thinking of the airport scene, which happens earlier.
Yeah. Well, but that guy was pointing a gun at him.
Right. That's true. Yeah. So that's one guy down.
Yeah.
But I could have sworn that he killed people in the park.
Anyway. I thought so too, and I went back, and he doesn't kill him.
Wow. I wasn't paying that much attention. Anyway, so they escape the barn. They escape the guys. They hotwire one of their trucks, and they go to Jack Murphy's friend's house, which is a handicapped guy from the war, I guess.
And from Clue.
And from Clue, that's true.
He's a cop in Clue, yeah.
Yeah, y'all will see him momentarily in a couple of weeks. And so this one lady, the lady who killed a private detective and who obviously framed Jack Murphy, is actually hunting down everybody in Jack Murphy's life and killing them. So she makes her way to the same place, to Jack Murphy's friend's house out in the boonies. How she got this information, I don't know. How she got there so quick, we have no idea. But she makes her way inside his friend's house once Jack Murphy and Arabelle leave. And
he may have just been in the phone book.
It's fun. And this scene is weird. It's like different from the rest of the movie because all of a sudden it's like a killer point of view camera, right?
Yeah. It's just weird. But so she gets into his house and she steals one of his hunting rifles, which is loaded, apparently.
Yeah.
And she shoots him in the face. And blood splatter again.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the blood splatter is impressive.
Do you notice in her memory book of murders that, like, she's got a dozen pictures of him just posing for her?
Right.
Like, in his front yard or whatever.
Like, I'll give her this much. Like, she really did her homework.
Yeah.
Like, she scoped out the place and friends and all that. So after she kills Jack Murphy's friend, she makes her way back to the city, and she looks up the judge that put her away. She puts on a wig, and she gives him a flirty face at a restaurant, and judges being who they are, I guess, Caesar gives her a come-hither look, and they start having dinner together, and she convinces him to take her to, a hotel. Which, by the way,
it's a Mormon church. They're doing – it's a baptismal font. That's where
– Yeah, dude. That was so weird. Like,
yeah, weird tub.
Yeah.
That's a weird, weird tub. Anyway, so it's got to be the best kind of death scene ever because she's bathing him and then she starts tickling his feet like a child and he can't stop with the giggles and he's in the water and she just drowns him. Like,
yep.
This teaches you, man, if you ever hook up with a woman in a bathtub, don't let her tickle your feet.
Or
you will. No, I don't know. I mean, you're into that thing. I'm not going to shoot you. Anyway.
I'm more into the drowning, I think.
So she drowns him and gets her revenge against the judge who put her in jail. And now we know what's going on. She's going after everybody who put her in jail. Meanwhile, Jack Murphy thinks that the mob is actually the one who framed him. And he goes after one of the mob guys who earlier had to be told what Murphy's Law really is. Which is don't F with Jack Murphy. So anyway, they go to his penthouse, which this movie is so, so porn-like. And I don't remember this, guys.
Just do it. Do it now.
Yeah, like there's this weird, like really porny scene.
Is it weird that he's watching a he's watching a porn while that's happening.
He's watching porn while he's getting served.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, am I the only one who, I don't know if it's regional, but like when I was a kid, there used to be cinemas dedicated to like triple X movies out in the open. I mean, like, I mean, there is now, but you have to go to like these hideaway places now. Not that I know, but like, but that it's not like easy to access. Back when I was a kid, there used to be like cinemas that used to advertise this crap. Did that ever happen, y'all?
We grew up in Utah.
No, no, not where we're from.
Definitely didn't happen there. That's tricky. Forget.
But it was still, I mean, but still, like what you're saying, I mean, I think it was like a lot less. I mean, because it was huge in the 70s, right?
Yeah, yeah.
My understanding of the history of pornography is everything changed in the 80s when everyone was just passing the tapes around.
Yeah. Well, this movie felt like that. Like it felt like it was just – it's off-putting. There's so much weird – it's almost – it's softcore porn basically, this movie. And I don't remember this, man. I don't know why I don't remember that. Anyway, so they torture the mob guy, and it turns out that he has nothing to do with setting Jack Murphy up. So he's trying to figure out like, okay, if it's not, you know, this dude, then who is it? You know, long story short, he figures out that he put somebody away years ago and that person's out for revenge. So now he has a name. He's got a face. He knows he's coming after him. And it's all about trying to work with the police, who doesn't want to work with him because he's out in the run. And he's trying to get them to cooperate so they can try to get this one person. And they finally chase her down to the Bradbury building, which if y'all know, if y'all seen Blade Runner, you'll know what this building is. It's a very, very famous building.
Do they call it the – I think they actually say
– They do.
They call it the Bradbury building.
Yeah, they say the Bradbury building.
Meet me at the Bradbury building.
Yeah. So before they even get to the Bradbury building, crazy lady kidnaps Arabelle. And she leaves a lipstick message saying, meet me at the Bradbury. So here goes Jack Murphy. He calls the cops. He calls the cops that he – one of the cops that hates him picks up the phone. And he says, hey, tell the lieutenant, this is going down. Go to the Bradbury building. You know, the person who set me up is there. And, you know, meet me there, whatever. So Jack Murphy shows up. The cop shows up. But it turns out the cop is working for the mob boss.
Yes.
And the mob boss wants Jack Murphy dead. Hmm. You know what? One thing I'm not mentioning. So I know this is the movie where Bronson doesn't clean house as much, but one bullet blows up four motorcycles and one bullet blows up a car. So
that's so great.
Count for something. It has to count for something.
It counts for something. I'm going to talk about that later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that has to count for cleaning house. Anyway, so they're at the Bradbury building. There's this big showdown. You're expecting like maybe an Uzi against Charles Bronson. No. This is Macho Man movie. The villain has a freaking crossbow. And she's shooting it at Charles Bronson, him with his snub nose against a crossbow, a crooked cop, and the mob. Like, you can't get more macho than this.
Hey, Frank had an Uzi.
Oh, yeah, he did. Frank shows up with an Uzi. But the main villain has a freaking crossbow, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, Charles Bronson takes out the crooked cop, kills the entire mob. He cleans house. And that's easily like six people right there, guys.
The lady with the crossbow, does she kill a couple of the mob guys? But the best one, right? So is this Mr. Vincenzo himself or just one of the other mob guys where Charles Bronson dives through glass and somehow, while passing through the pane of glass, grabs a shard and stabs the guy in the neck?
No, he doesn't stab the guy in the neck. He shoves him towards the broken window. And there's a shard there that stabs him in the neck.
Oh, I choose to believe my.
I like your version better.
Quickly.
And I wish you were directing this movie.
Was that Vincenzo or was that just a goon?
No, I think it was a goon.
I think it was a goon. But I did love this part because this is something that we don't usually see in video games. You know, this is the standard kung fu situation where the boss is on the top level with a hostage and he has to go up the stairs, you know, to fight that person. But this is a new kind of twist on that where. Yeah, he has to go up and fight the boss at the top, but there's pressure from a completely different boss at the bottom, and he's being squeezed between the two.
Mm.
Yeah. This is Double Dragon going towards the big boss, and the little guys are still coming up behind you.
Kung Fu.
Or Kung Fu, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, he cleans house enough to where it's just him, and the villain. I keep forgetting her name. Joan Crawford, I guess.
It's Joan something.
It's Joan something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just as crazy as Joan Crawford.
Joan so, Didion, is that it?
Yeah, something like that. So he goes up to boss level, and they're duking it out. And long story short, villain is hanging by a hatchet, and she's about to fall six stories. She's screaming for help. She's telling Jack Murphy, help me, help me. And Jack Murphy, who has Batman's been shot. He's been shot, right? He's hurt.
I think
he's
so.
Been axe cut. In the
he's been axe cut.
Yeah.
So, but why is she's hanging from the hatchet? Because of his flying jump kick.
Yeah, oh, I forgot about the flying jump kick. That was so this 90-year-old man, he does a flying jump kick like from
what
one level to another.
What he thinks might be his last flying jump kick. All the effort went into
it. And it's a thing of beauty. Bruce Lee couldn't have done better. It was just great. Awesome. Anyway, so she's hanging by the hatchet and she's screaming, help me, help me. And he's like, nah, I don't think so. And then she tells him, go to hell, Jack Murphy. And then he delivers a line of all lines. Ladies first.
That's pretty good.
And then she falls and dies. But Arabella is still stuck in is it before or after? I don't know. But Arabella's stuck in the elevator. She's about to get crushed.
He saves her from the elevator, but she gets killed by a crossbow. But then it turns out
So before even the flying kick, she gets a crossbow to the back. And we think she's dead. And the movie ends him in the hospital with Arabella somehow fully awake now.
Yeah.
Hurling 13-year-old insults,
right?
And him saying,
"I'm
going to buy a box."
She's paralyzed from the mouth down, but that's all she needs.
She just needs the mouth. And he tells her he's going to buy a box of soap to wash her dirty mouth. And then we get the song to end all songs, Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law.
We'll talk about Murphy's Law. You forgot the part where he said he's going to get soap to wash her mouth and everything below that.
Like, no, from like
down to her toes or something.
All the way down. Yeah,
that's nasty.
Yeah, it's so we got to talk about Arabella and Bronson, right? Because there's a couple of like the most awkward sexual tension scenes in this film.
Yeah,
and he's 43 years older than she is, and
it's like 60 years older than her.
Oh my gosh, it's awful. There's the scene where she's just watching him shave, like it's supposed to be a sexy "I'm watching you shave" scene, but watching 80-year-old Charles Bronson shave is not sexy.
Not at all.
And then they just like kind of have that dialogue where he's like, I don't know, he's like, I'm too old for it. And she's like, I can't remember what they said, but like her last words, I'll prove it. And it's like, oh, please something interrupt this. Please, anything. Because I just like, I don't think I could have even have handled it if they'd even kissed. Like them kissing.
I think Art from the Force calls up and interrupts the flirtation.
Oh, man.
Much to the relief of Charles Bronson, I think. I think he was just kind of like, what are you doing? What's going on here?
Are we supposed to flirt?
Yeah. She says, like, no, you look pretty good. I really like your sandwich. Like, I call it the mayonnaise sandwich seduction scene.
Oh, yeah.
She says, you're not so old. If you stop boozing, you'll look better, is what she says.
Just like mayonnaise.
The mayonnaise seduction scene.
Yeah.
You know, that mayonnaise scene made me think they were already married for 30 years.
is that what that's supposed to be? They've got to that comfortable spot?
Yeah, I know. That's an old couple argument. Why don't you have any mayonnaise? Everybody.
Who doesn't like mayonnaise?
It's been 40 years, Margaret. I never liked mayonnaise.
Oh, man. This movie. So.
Murphy's Law. I am not disappointed.
Yeah. Well, so on the one hand, like severely disappointed. On the other hand, not disappointed. It's hard to, because I think maybe I don't know if Death Wish is more of like him just going on a rampage. And so I kind of really thought that there would be at least 30 people killed in this movie, and there wasn't. But it's I really don't know what to think of this movie, because he is really old, and he's only 65, and I know Tom Cruise is like 80 and he's still doing his own stunts, but he is 65 and he looks like he's almost 90, and his wardrobe looks like he like pulled it off the floor of his bedroom and it's been worn multiple times. It's not ready to be washed yet, because I don't know, but like I don't know, there's just it's It's almost like the sad Charles Bronson in a way.
It fits so well together, though. It's just so – it's like there's the Miami Vice 80s and then there's the Charles Bronson 80s, you know?
Yeah.
And I just love his weird suits. It's like the guy in the 80s who's still like in the 60s or something. And like remember the part where they're like – all the cops are trying to get Charles Bronson and they're like, oh, what's he driving? It's like, oh, it's a brown Oldsmobile. It looks pretty new. And it's like the worst car ever. It's like I remember in the 80s, and I don't know what it is. Is this something about movies or like cop movies or whatever where all the cars are just old, dumb-looking Oldsmobiles? Yeah. I remember in the 80s, like we had a Mazda 626, and it's not like we were a cool family, but I'm like, that's what I remember the cars of the 80s looking like. But Charles Bronson, of course, drives a car that looks like it's like 70 years old. And it's kind of a new Oldsmobile.
So yeah. I remember my grandparents telling me like that they'd been saving up for an Oldsmobile and it was like something they were looking forward to buying their whole life and finally getting that Oldsmobile. I don't know. So it's interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah.
Those cars were horrible.
Oh boy.
I think this movie was made for an older generation that grew up with Charles Bronson that still wanted to feel they could kick ass if they were given the opportunity. Like, you know, and I deal with folks like this all the time because I work at a public library. So I work with people that get all hot and bothered. They get in your face about stuff. Hmm. And there's like these 70-year-old men who come up to me like, you can't tell me what to do. And that's what it reminds me of. Like, dude, you're not going to hurt anybody. Like, scream all you want. You're not going to hurt anybody. And I feel that's what Charles Bronson wanted to go out in a bang, I guess, in his life and, you know, make a movie where he seriously kicks some ass. But I'm not buying it, man. He's not scary in this movie. That's what kills me. He's not scary.
All these old men at the library, you can start calling them dinosaur dork. So if you want to know, the average Rotten Tomato score of these three films is 56, but that's only because one of them is a 95.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
So
I know Red Sun is 40. So if I do my math, I could mathematically figure out Murphy's Law, but I can't.
Yeah, don't hurt your head. It's 33%.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Not bad. The IMDb is 5.9, so that's not bad. So 8.5 for Once Upon a Time in the West on the IMDb, which is pretty high for IMDb. And then 6.8 for Red Sun. Now, if we're talking monies, Once Upon a Time in the West made it cost $5 million, made $5.5 million. Red Sun, I don't know what the budget was, but it was $4.8 million is what it brought in. Murphy's Law is the one that made the most. It cost $6 million and it made $10 million. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for Murphy's Law. I will say,
I think my grandfather was good for three of those million.
Murphy's Law, you're right. Jack Murphy isn't scary, but I think they did something or they attempted. Maybe they didn't do it very well, but I think this is what they were going for. That the same year as when Die Hard came out, right? Which is crazy. Do you want to see Die Hard or Murphy's Law?
Yeah,
I think you know what? Oh gosh, I think it's a great double bill, honestly.
Yeah.
No way.
So what the thing with this movie though to me is there's like moments in the movie where he looks tired and not the character looking tired or exasperated, but like Charles Bronson looks tired in this film. Like if he could stop shooting the film, maybe he would, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
I can't believe I'm still doing this.
Yeah.
You still give me a gum for this crap.
That was actually pretty good.
Well, no, but the thing is, he's not scary, but I think what they tried to do in Murphy's Law is like they open the movie with him getting humiliated.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and then it continues.
and it continues. So it's like
from there.
And so it's sort of like they're stacking the odds against him because it's like he's not a Dirty Harry. He's not cool.
No,
he doesn't have it. Like he's kind of out of control in a different sort of way. He's not like spiraling out of control like a bad corrupt cop. He's spiraling out of control like a sad divorced dad, you know? And so it's like, is he – that's the big question. Is he going to garner enough energy for that jump kick at the end because he's been beaten down his whole life, you know?
So is this the Rocky of Bronson cop movies?
Yes.
I think that kick was all about the divorce. But like here's the thing that you said, he's not Clint Eastwood, but he should have been.
Yeah.
Like, I think you rework this movie and change some stuff in the script and get rid of Annabelle as a character. This movie's, of course, completely different. But you can make him like a Clint Eastwood character, man. Like, somebody mean, tough. You don't want to mess with this guy.
So I wonder if, like, because his cop movies are all shot in the 80s, and I wonder if that was just a decade late. Like should his cop movies have been made in the 70s when you know, he could take off his shirt and look like he actually spent a couple hours a day in the gym or whatever. So I don't know. But again, like, this is the only Bronson cop movie I've ever seen, so I can't really judge. I enjoyed it. No, I mean, this was a fun movie to watch.
I liked it, and I think I don't know. I mean, this is my big dip into Bronson movies, like, yeah. Really. Like, I'm not like a Charles Bronson guy. I haven't watched a lot of movies, but I will say I kind of appreciate sad Bronson. I do. Like, I think he has a sad face, and he can, and so I think it goes places with me.
Oh yeah. Oh, me, if you want sad Bronson, I'd recommend Seawolf.
Which they reference in this film.
They do. I don't remember that.
When they're in the helicopter, she calls him Seawolf.
No, she calls him Airwolf.
Airwolf. Oh, dang it. Dang it.
Come on, Roy.
That's her big. That's one of her many insults. Probably, you know, the most biting was, hey, Airwolf.
He's like,
get it together, vomit breath.
Can you fly this copter? Can you? Yeah. Mm. When did you fly a chopper? He's like, in the war. They were invented.
Well, a stuntman did most of the flying, but I think he can remember.
Yeah. So. Okay, I can't wait. Let's talk awards, shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Roy, what's the best title?
Once Upon a Time in the West. So It sounds cliche because there are about 30 movies called Once Upon a Time in the, and several of them are Sergio Leone movies. Yes. But this is the first one.
But this is the first one. Okay, I'll just cut in right there. I wasn't going to vote for it for that same reason. I'm like, oh, all the other Once Upon a Time in those, including all the Sergio Leone movies. But you're right. This is the first one. And I think it's the one that sounds the best. It sounds the most fable-like, you know. So, yeah. Mark, I assume you picked that too.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
That's the best. Hands down.
Good time.
Not even close.
Okay, what's the best poster, Mark?
I'm gonna have to go with Murphy's Law.
Ooh, yeah, with the them running, you know.
Yeah, with them running, man. Because I mean, you're promised like this epic cop movie. I mean, we don't get it, but at least the poster is showing you that, you know, he's gonna clean all sorts of house.
It's a great poster. How great would the movie have been if they had never gotten the handcuff off for the duration of the film? Which, by the way, like, I don't understand why that's not the first thing he did when he broke out of jail. Like,
he had the keys, man.
Taking the keys. He had the keys, right?
He had them.
I think in a practical sense, since she was a hostage, they kind of come in handy so she couldn't get away.
But would a cop really want to take a hostage?
Oh, a cop never would. Would a cop really, like, knock out another cop and hold another cop at gunpoint? That's like, that's a kind of a point of no return.
Killed in this movie, so.
Okay.
My favorite movie poster?
Yeah, your favorite movie poster.
I'm going with Red Sun. I think it's pretty great looking.
Oh my gosh. Well, you guys, Once Upon a Time in the West has the painting of the train and the guy getting like shot off
the
train.
That's true.
It's a really great poster. Oh, these are all really great posters.
I know. I was like staring at the posters. I'm like, we got that poster website where we order the posters for The Fugitive and Clue.
Movieposters.com.
Yeah, movieposters.com and Vertigo, because we're going to hang the posters up at the Post Theater at our live event July 1st. I was all excited about that. And I'm like, I should just buy all three of these Bronson posters. That would just be great.
They're pretty good.
We forgot contact information. All right, let's do it after awards. Whatever.
Sure.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, Roy, best opening credits.
I'm going to go with Red Sun. It's kind of your Western opening credits, but it's in the red Japanese text. And so, Red Sun. I was tempted to go with Once Upon a Time in the West, all 20 minutes of the opening credits. But anyway.
Once Upon a Time in the West, man. Like, those first 10 minutes where tension is just built up, nobody says a word, and it's only broken when you hear the harmonica. Perfection, man. So perfect. I love that.
Well, this is crazy because I went with Murphy's Law once again. No, in all three different ones, because the whole opening credits is that whole sequence where like she steals the car and he throws the groceries at her and then she kicks him in the crotch, and then we get some residual like of the 10 minutes of him waking up the next day and
no way, man,
just taking forever. Yeah,
I like when she screams, "You're not supposed to do that."
Okay, Mark, best technology.
The steam train shows up in two of the movies we saw. Oh,
by the way, I'm still convinced that trains don't actually work.
They're just like movie props.
I can't wrap my head around train technology.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with honorable mention to Robard's boot gun. That was pretty great.
That's good, boot gun. Yeah.
Did that end up with someone getting shot in the face?
I think so.
I think so. But I'm going to go with the flying carpet hanging bed, otherwise known as the rape bed. But that's a pretty cool idea, hanging your bed from the ceiling.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. All right. I have several – well, I have two honorable mentions. First of all are the pay stalls in Murphy's Law that she crawls under, the stalls that you actually have to – they're coin-operated so you can open the door and use the bathroom. Yeah. And also – In Murphy's Law, the two-story bathtub that she kills the judge in, which I guess I'm doing that as technology. Like, if I can have that feature in a house, right. Like you can dive in, like from the top floor down into a bathtub. but the winner, of course, is it in Red Sun? It's when the Comanches put wet rawhide on Honey Rider's neck, and it gets all tightened. And you can't cut it off, brother. You got to shoot it off.
You shoot that knot off.
You better hold still. Yeah. So, like, you shoot the rawhide off someone's neck. That's a dangerous thing to do. Yeah. Okay, Roy, best outfit.
Okay, so in Red Sun, Ursula Andress has her kind of traveling outfit has the red skirt pants, scants. I think they're pretty great.
Okay, cool. Mark?
Oh man, Henry Fonda's villain getup.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah, what was he wearing?
Man in black. Evil. It's just all black.
All black. Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. Mm. Very good. Okay, I went with Ursula Andress's sheet. okay.
I changed my vote.
okay, Mark, best name.
So, man, it's really a tie between Harmonica and Cheyenne. But I'm going to go with Harmonica just because it shouldn't be a name, but it is, and I love it, and it works.
It's not a name. That's why I didn't
say it. Cheyenne gave it to him.
Roy?
So, my honorable mention is one of the three outlaws that gets killed at the train station is named Snakey.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I'm also going with Harmonica. That's an iconic name.
Okay, I'm going with Arabella McGee.
Okay.
All right. Roy, best food.
Sure, the Sweetwater feast before Frank came and killed everybody. That was going to be some fine eating.
Yeah, that was.
Oh, that was pretty good. Yeah. Did you catch a glimpse of what they were eating?
There were lots of breads and hams and corns, lots of corns on the cobs.
Nice.
It looked really good. And then when Claudia Cardinale showed up, all that was left to eat was the dead bodies. That's what was left on the tables at that point.
I'll pass.
Okay. All right, Mark, food.
Arabella's omelet.
Honorable mention from me. I would have eaten that omelet, even if it was burnt. But my winner is Tashara Mifune's hiking sushi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Not a mayonnaise sandwich. So the hiking sushi, that looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know about eating sushi that's been in somebody's bag for an entire day out in the desert. Like,
apparently it gave him superpowers.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Something tells me you're going to have stomach problems.
Yeah. okay, Mark, best alien.
Arabella, because no human can be that pissed all the time.
That's good. Okay, good alien. Okay, Roy.
Well, I went with Kuroda.
Me too, Kuroda.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
All right, Roy, best special effects.
Okay, in the two Western films, I'm going to go with all of the horses that appear to get badly injured in every 5 minutes, but I'm sure they were just fine.
They're fine. They're professionals.
They're professionals.
Okay. Mark FX.
The blood splatter scenes in Murphy's
Law. Oh, yeah, good.
They're just spectacular.
They had a good splatter guy. You know, yeah. He was just like off screen and he was just like spitting blood in her face. Like, okay, that was a good take.
Because you know what, man? In Once Upon a Time in the West and in Red Sun, all the blood scenes look like hyper red paint.
Mm.
And it annoyed me. In Murphy's Law, at least we got like real blood splatter to the face. And that was just brilliant.
I'm a big fan of the Italian film, like hyper red blood. I kind of love it. It's the it's the Dario Argento blood.
It annoys me, man, because it takes me out of the movie. Mm. All right, oh, well, that's me.
Okay, my special effects, I went with, well, honorable mention to the fly at the beginning of Once Upon a Time in the West.
Oh, yeah.
Like, whoever...
Is that done with honey?
Yeah, whoever trained that fly did a good job.
I think they put honey on that guy's face, like, and that's what IMDb tells.
Yeah, so honey on the guy's face, so the fly was flying around, and they got the whole thing. But my winner is going to be in Red Sun, when they ride their horses down a super steep cliff. I'm like, oh, wow, how'd they do that?
Yeah.
And then I look into the horizon, and I see that the horizon is like 45 degrees, you know? They just tilted the camera pretty hard. okay. Roy, best location?
Sure, the Flagstone Arizona Hotel. You got a poster bed, you got a soaking tub, and you got a wonderful view of the Wild West show outside.
Okay, very good. Very good. Okay, Mark, location?
The bar in Once Upon a Time.
Okay, yeah, oh, that's a good bar. That's where they all three met, right?
Yeah. Okay. It's a great scene, and, like, I felt how filthy the Old West must have been.
You know, the movie could have ended in that scene.
It could have.
Yeah. honorable mention, I already mentioned this, but the murder tub, the judge's murder tub.
That's your favorite location.
But also Monument Valley.
Where?
It's a weird Monument Valley.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Roy, best song. What was the song?
The choices are limited, but I'm going to go with Murphy's Law.
I am also going to go with Murphy's Law. I'll talk about that a little later, I think. Now, did anybody notice who the musician is for Murphy's Law?
Oh, I hope it's a Bronson.
Oh, you guys didn't notice this? There are three credited musicians to Murphy's Law. Paul McCallum, who plays another character in Murphy's Law named Hogg.
Oh, my goodness. I'm looking at this right now.
Not sure who it is. Also, a man named John Bismuth or something. But the key, I think, the lyricist and vocalist, Kathleen Wilhoit, who is Arabella. Arabella is singing the Murphy's Law theme song at the end. Yes.
This is her big break.
Yes.
The music startup.
It's great. It's great.
If anything could possibly go wrong. It will.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's such a horrible song, but I kind of loved hearing it.
It is great. Okay.
I can't believe that was her. Wow.
Yep, totally her. Oh, and we all agree it's Murphy's Law, the song, right?
Yeah. Because
that was the song. Okay, Mark, who was the best guest star?
Lionel Stander is the barman. Water? Like, why do you want water?
Okay.
I like seeing him. Because I was a big fan of Heart to Heart when I was a kid.
Okay,
and he's the butler, I guess. What was he? The butler in Heart to Heart.
The guy is he the guy who narrates the theme song at the beginning? It's like they're married, and I'm with them, and I'm driving the car. That guy.
Was he a chauffeur? Or was he a butler? What the heck was he?
I think he was like a chauffeur.
Lionel Stander? Are we talking about Lionel Stander?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the barkeep.
Well, yeah, but in Heart to Heart, he was.
No, in Heart to Heart.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was focused on Murphy's Law, the song. I apologize.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was their chauffeur.
With that.
I worked for them. Something like that. Yeah. Okay. I went with my guest star is, well, Charles Bronson, but also Toshiro Mifune is my guest. I don't think he's been around. Roy, did you say your guest?
I did not, but I'm going to go with Keenan Wynn, who's the He does the, what do you call it? He's the auctioneer?
The auctioneer, Keenan Wynn, who plays Alonzo Hawk in all those Disney movies.
And, which will make Andy happy, but he is also Captain Colonel Bat Guano in Doctor Strangelove.
Right, which is why he was an honorable mention for my external recurring character, because he was in Doctor Strangelove.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of external recurring characters, Roy, who was yours?
Okay, well, honorable mention to Dario Argento as the writer. I'm going to go ahead, though, and go with Lionel Stander, who is Cup in Transformers the movie.
Oh, that's how I remember that name.
Wow.
He's Cup. Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
Oh, Hot Rod. You young Transformers, you don't know what it was like in the war on Cybertron. Let me tell you some stories. I got some stories. Here, the universal greeting. Give him a little energon.
John, that was worth this entire podcast.
Lionel Stander's my favorite actor. Holy cow, I didn't realize that was Cup. Oh, thank you.
Oh,
thank you.
Neither did I.
This is probably the nicest thing you've ever given me. Realizing who Lionel Stander is. Okay, Mark, who is your external recurring character?
I couldn't find any because y'all have covered way too many movies, and I tried. Okay. I had no idea Lionel Stander voiced Cup.
Okay.
Oh, there are a bunch. You want to just rattle them off?
There are. Well, okay. Let me say mine because there are some obvious ones, right? First of all, I mentioned Keenan Wynn in Doctor Strangelove. Also, Lawrence Tierney, who is the private investigator that Joan shoots in the face. That is, what's his name? Is it Cabot in Reservoir Dogs? The main boss in Reservoir Dogs?
Oh my God!
Yeah.
No, it's so true.
He, of course, is also Elaine Bennis's father in Seinfeld in that one episode. And then, of course, Jason Robards, who is Coleman in Dream a Little Dream. Not Dream a Little Dream 2, even though they mention his name 70 million times in that movie. But
is it weird in Dream a Little Dream 2 when they just call him Robards?
Yeah. But it's so funny. I mean, I was trying to get Katie like, oh my gosh, that's Jason Robards. That's Jason Robards. He's the coolest guy in this movie. It's Jason Robards, and he's the biggest doofus in Dream a Little Dream 2, and I only know him as an old man. He does old man Tai Chi. He's the worst. And he was so cool in Once Upon a Time in the West. It was like my mind was blown anyway. Okay, so Roy, you have some others to rattle off.
Oh, you know, I had a bunch in mind, and now I can't remember them. Let me look at the. Have we seen Woody Strode in something else?
Woody Strode,
who's no, I went through. I went through him, and he gets killed in the first 10 minutes. He's a Stony, I think. They don't mention his name in any of the scenes, but he's the black dude that has water falling on his hat, and then he drinks it.
Oh yeah, that guy. Yeah. I don't think so. Shoot.
It seems like there were a handful of us. Let me just look at the cast real darn quick of, now have we seen Alain Delon in anything else? I don't know.
Alain Delon is one of my guests. I don't think we've seen him in anything else, but he's in some great French movies. I do know that. Yeah.
Yeah. And is this our first Toshiro Mifune movie?
I believe it is. I believe it is.
Okay. Yeah. I thought, Jack Elam would have been in one of y'all's previous movies and he wasn't.
Not, yeah.
So, by the way, Woody Strode, that black guy at the beginning, he is in Scream. Little scene Scream from 1981.
Oh, wow.
That I've never heard of. Okay. But it's Scream. It's the same title as that. So,
never mind. I was going to say Bill Henderson from Ben, or who plays Ben Wilkov, he's in Clue, but it's possible he was in something that we've already seen, but I don't think so. Anyway, we're using up some time here.
Fair enough. Okay, let's get the show on the road. Okay, internal recurring character, Roy, who do you have?
Internal recurring character, I have number one, Jump Kicks.
Okay.
but John Landis, who does stunts in both Once Upon a Time in the West and Red Sun.
Let me correct you. John Landis did stunts in Once Upon a Time in the West, and he was an uncredited actor in Red Sun.
There you go.
Yeah.
Still counts.
John Landis, the director of Spies Like Us, I believe, and Three Amigos. So that's kind of crazy. Okay, Mark, do you have a different internal recurring character? There's one really obvious one, of course.
I had John Landis, but also Whiskey
Whiskey's good. Okay. Very nice. I had John Landis. Charles Bronson is probably the most obvious internal character, but yeah, we didn't have to pick him. Okay, this is the big. Mark, who is the best death?
I'm going to have to give that to Kurova. And the reason I went with his death is that it pissed me off because it was all Link's fault. Yeah. And it was all for nothing because yeah. he was gonna up and kill Ghosh, and Link is like, no, don't do it, you promised me, bruh. And then Ghosh turns around and kills him. And then what happens? He ends up killing Ghosh anyway.
Yeah.
So it's really annoying how he died. He shouldn't have died, man. That's not cool.
Yeah, it's not. I felt the same way. Not cool. Made me think though, kinda. Mm. Okay, Roy, best death.
Do you think in heaven, Kurova is like, why didn't you go get the money? My death is completely wasted.
Oh, he left the sword hanging on the wire.
Yeah.
Okay, my honorable mention is the goon that gets the glass shard to the neck.
Yeah, that's good.
That's pretty good. I'm going to have to go with Frank. This might be one of the best like duels in Western film history.
I agree.
Yeah.
What
makes it so good?
It's because it's not drawn out. And they're only like 3 feet apart, which is great, right?
Yeah.
But they just draw at the same time, and then it's the whole, like, as Frank is dying, it's revealed to him who the guy is, and it's putting the harmonica in his mouth, and that's when the harmonica goes in his mouth, and he has that recognition right before he dies. So
Brilliant. It's great.
Okay, that's good. Okay, I'm gonna have to go with so in Red Sun during the train heist. Someone, I can't remember who, but some hero on the train, there's like a soldier or like an undercover deputy on the train or something, who pulls a gun on a guy, you know, and he's sitting in his seat, but then the undercover train robber guy is sitting across from him, and he shoots him.
Ghosh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Ghosh is kind of like, he just kind of holding down the fort. He doesn't reveal himself, and he's just sitting there like a normal passenger. He shoots the hero on the train, but that's not my favorite death. My favorite death is the guy on the opposite side of the seat where the bullet goes all the way through. He slumps over, and he was just innocently doing his Sudoku puzzle on the train. It's like he had no idea what was going on. So that's my favorite death. Okay. Mark, best villain.
Frank, hands down. Don't even come at me with anybody else. Okay. It has to be Frank.
Well, John will, but I agree with Mark. I think Frank is one of the greatest. Again, he's an iconic villain, and I love how well Fonda plays it. Like he does a great job, and so Frank is he's an excellent villain.
So who's my villain?
Well, John, I'm assuming then that you're gonna go with Ursula Andress, who villainously supports her man even when he's bad.
That's a really good reasoning. Honorable mention to Ursula Andress. I'm going to
You're going to go abstract, aren't you?
No, I'm not this time. I'm actually going to go with Ghosh. Specifically for one act, because he's a big villain. First of all, he's French. And
that's a problem.
Yeah.
Check.
But second of all, there's a sequence, and it's during the train heist again, where, you know, they ran over all the soldiers. The soldiers get out to move the sheep, and then they take over the train. The train starts moving, and then they're like, hey. And so the soldiers start running after the train, and Ghosh actually helps a soldier get on the train and then shoots him off the train.
Wham.
Like, that is some extra mile villainy there. Like, he could have just not bothered doing anything. And everyone would have survived, yeah.
That tops killing the kid? It probably does.
No, man.
Yeah.
You can't. No. No, dude.
Well, but Frank has a reason, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, that's the thing. Look, I just want to establish I'm not pro-killing children anymore.
Anymore.
Yeah.
But the point is that Frank is supposed to be, like, it's supposed to be getting blamed on Cheyenne.
Yeah.
And they can't blame it on Cheyenne if that kid knows who really did it, right?
Right. So but maybe I'm changing my villain to the guy who said Frank's name and forced Frank to shoot a kid.
Snakey or whatever.
Yeah.
The very fact that the henchmen are like, dude, really? A kid? We're going to kill a kid? Frank's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll do it. And he just
It does.
Right in the face.
I kind of wonder if there's that scene in, I don't want to give it away, but I think it's the last season of Breaking Bad, and it's a moment with Jesse Plemons' character.
Oh, he kills the kid.
Well, I didn't want to just come out and say it, but I guess it's pretty obvious that's what we're talking about.
It's a train heist.
It's been like 7 years, y'all. Like, come on.
It's the train heist scene, yep.
And it's the train heist scene, yeah. So, okay. So, I think that might be an homage to this. Okay. So.
Wait a minute. Did you call him Jesse Plemons?
Yeah. In Breaking Bad.
Jesse Plemons is in Breaking Bad. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Never mind. I thought you were talking about Jesse. Never mind.
Okay.
I got my Jesse's confused.
Yeah, there are too many Jesses in my...
Too many Jesses.
I am still pro-killing Jesses. There are too many Jesses.
Okay,
Roy, best hero.
Well, probably the most honorable person in all of these films is Kuroda.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and go with him. Although Harmonica is... I love Harmonica. I guess he's a hero. It's Kuroda.
He's a hero. He's an event. He's kind of a... He's, well... I don't know. He's just mad about his brother. Okay, Mark, who's the best hero?
Obviously, Harmonica.
Okay.
He gets revenge for the right reasons. He doesn't mistreat women... He doesn't use the services of the ladies in the night like Kuroba.
And he helps her build the station. He gets that going.
He does. Yeah, yeah. She's going to be rich because of him.
He whips the Teamsters into, gets them going.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Okay, well, my hero is...
you say Ghosh, I swear to God.
No, it's Jack Murphy's exploding bullets. Every vehicle he shoots, he blows up.
Yeah. I love that.
They're going
so much.
they're just all out. These bullets are given like literally 3,000%.
Oh man.
Okay, Mark, best goof.
Okay, so two of them. The most obvious is that Murphy escapes with all the keys and he never uncuffs himself from Arabella.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that movie would have been like 40 minutes shorter without her, like that alone. But his scar moves from the right side of his forehead to the left side of his forehead for the second half of the movie. Unexplained.
What?
And like, yeah, pay attention. Wow. It starts off on his right side and it ends up on his left.
Huh. That's great. Okay, I didn't know that.
Usually stuff like that doesn't bother me, but I'll say I was watching an episode of Kojak today, and from behind, Telly Savalas has his arms crossed, and then when it switches to him in front, now he's got his hands in his pockets, and it switched back and forth like 7 times. So
he's practicing his sleight of hand, just his moves really fast.
Okay, man, I'm 8 episodes into Kojak, and it makes me so happy. My favorite movie goof, or the best one, is at the end of Red Sun when Link is waiting for the train to arrive. If you're looking hard enough, you can see a car driving in the background.
Oh, no.
Oh, nice.
I need to check that out now.
I thought it was a goof. I'm like, hey, there are power lines in this scene. And then I was informed that those are telegraph lines.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, that took all my goof fun away. But I have a couple of goofs. Honorable mention, I thought it was goofy of Joan to just go so, like, be so meticulous in assembling her album of evidence, that could be used against her. But also when Charles Bronson and Arabella steal the chopper, they don't put on their headphones. Like, you always have to put on headphones and do the microphone chopper thing. They were just talking like normal in the chopper. I wanted them to put on the chopper headphones. That's just something I like seeing in movies. Okay. Roy, best LOL.
Okay, so you kind of brought it up already in one of your awards, but when he shoots the windshield out of the back of the car and the car explodes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he didn't even shoot like anywhere near the engine. I mean, he might as well have shot the tire for... All
it was really common, like in the 80s, because like gas prices were low. Sometimes you would just like after you filled the car up, and you put the gas nozzle back on the pump, and you have to take it over the other side. That you just continue swabbing the car with gasoline over the windshield. You know, just like while it's being put back. Yeah.
It was so cheap back then. Yeah, they made their car in gasoline.
Do whatever.
So I did have an honorable mention. At the end of Once Upon a Time in the West, the end credit title that says Once Upon a Time in the West is so bad.
It was just the lost credits.
It was like this weird, like you have the words Once Upon a Time in the West, and it's like this awful PowerPoint transition where it's like floating all over the screen, and it's going upside down, and it was really bad.
Not good for a Western. Like, because it's kind of like, it looks like cheap sci-fi work, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
No, that's pretty good. Okay, Mark, when did you laugh?
Oh, man, a lot. I mean, the honorable mention goes to the car blowing up by shooting. I thought he shot the muffler. And then when he uses the submachine gun to blow up all the motorcycles, I just couldn't stop laughing. But to me, the funniest scene is also one of the best scenes because the flying kick wants to convince me that 90-year-old man can do that.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a moment of seriousness, but I couldn't stop laughing, man. It was brilliant and funny at the same time.
Okay. My honorable mention, in Murphy's Law, when they go to arrest the crime boss or at least hassle him at dinner, you know, or...
The line, yeah.
Yeah, I can't... it's not the line, but they say... I can't remember if they say that his brother is dead or if they're going to arrest his brother.
They're going to arrest him.
They're going to arrest his brother. And then the mother, it shows her, and she literally has like a string of pearls that she's clutching. She's like, oh. It's like, wow, they're doing it. They're doing the clutching pearls. I'm going to go with Red Sun when Toshiro Mifune and Charles Bronson go into El Guapo's mission, and they're like, we think Ghosh is here. El Gosho, I guess I should call him. And we think he's here. And so then they walk in, and they walk right into a trap because Ghosh is right above him. He's like in the ceiling. He's like pointing his gun down at him. It's like, all right, I got the drop on you. I'm coming down. And then he like falls down, and he belly flops onto the ground right in front of him. I'm like, oh my gosh, that looks like it hurt Ghosh.
Yeah, and he still has the upper hand somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, Roy, key of D minor, what's the saddest moment in these?
Okay, well, it's a quote, and it's, what are we going to do about this one, Frank? Now that you've called me by name?
That's pretty good.
D-minor-y.
That's pretty D-minor-y. Okay, Mark, any sad moments?
The flashback that Harmonica has to him holding up his brother on his shoulders and Frank stuffing the harmonica in his mouth. Like, oh, that, it just hit me.
Okay, that's pretty sad. Okay,
well, great scene, but it's sad.
Mine is in Murphy's Law, and that's when he and Arabella invade Frank's penthouse and then harass him in his underwear, and he is just in his underwear crying, begging for his life. Okay.
Yeah, I was really sad.
All right, yeah.
Mark, WTH, what's the craziest moment?
Man, this one was pretty hard. Like, I guess the moment that the scene from Once Upon a Time, it was it necessary? I mean, I don't know.
Okay. Oh,
That is a what the heck kind of moment.
Earlier in the film when Robards is at her place and he's demanding coffee or whatever, right? Because he's like kind of flirting with her in a rough way, and then she says, you know, you can throw me on this table and do whatever you want with me, but when you're done, I'll be the same person, and I don't, and you know, and but then like she does get raped, and it's awful. It is really awful.
It's a serious, you know, WTH.
And moment. It's really long. It's not like the 15 seconds.
I know. Yeah, you don't know what to do about the discomfort that you're feeling because usually it's like, okay, this is going to be a quick scene, but it just goes on and on.
So I took advantage of the plus 10 second thing and I tapped that a couple times.
Like, let's move forward, yeah.
Well, every little bit counts in 2 hours and 45 minutes. All right, Roy, WTH.
Well, I got to go with Frank Kills the Kid, I guess.
Okay.
Well, that's true.
Those are all good. Okay, I didn't have any of yours, but here are my honorable mentions. First of all, the sandwich seduction scene that we've already talked about. Kind of crazy. I don't know what. I chalk it up to Arabella's concussion, probably. And let's see. Then I have it in Red Sun in the first few minutes when Charles Bronson just shoots a bunch of innocent people in the head. I'm like, oh my gosh, I assumed this was the hero of the movie, and it turns out it kind of is. But he shoots a bunch of people in the head for no reason. And let's see. Then, of course, the Rawhide scene where the Comanches put Rawhide on Ursula Andress, and so they have to shoot it off. But I think the winner is the exclamation of everybody, all of the Comanches that Toshiro Mifune kills in Red Sun, where they're like, what the heck? Was that a throwing star? They all said that.
Toshiro Mifune had more knives than Machete.
Yeah, yeah. They were
where did they all come from?
Yeah, it's... that's why he wears such a puffy suit.
Full of knives.
Yeah. Okay, Roy, best scene.
Sure. So my honorable mention is the final showdown of the Bradford. That's pretty great.
Okay.
But I'm going to go with the duel at the end of Once Upon a Time in the West.
Right. I knew that was coming. Okay. Mark, same thing?
Same thing. The showdown between Frank and Harmonica.
Okay. I went, and we didn't even talk about this really, but it's just kind of near the beginning of Murphy's Law where he cleans house at the airport.
Yeah. Well, that's a good one.
Yeah. And all those people are shot. He shoots the bad guy, but the bad guy shoots like a ton of people. It's like really crazy.
He shoots his hostess right in the face.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that's right. Again, right, that was like face. Another thing I was thinking about. Like a lot of people get shot point blank in the face in these movies, and I guess I'm old because it really affected me a lot more than when I was a kid. Because when I was a kid, I would have been so like, person got shot in the face. Yes. Ah.
No, like what bothered me was just so unnecessary. Like all he had to do was chuck her to the floor.
Yeah, he did not. There was absolutely no reason to do that. Like, why would you do that? Like,
yeah. You could see the thought process. Guy. He's like, let me just do this. Blam. Like, no rhyme or reason, man. Bothered me.
Mark, best actor.
I am going to have to go with Henry Fonda. Like, he really makes the movie. I know Charles Bronson's front and center in Once Upon a Time, but Henry Fonda as the villain just puts all the weight into that movie.
Okay, right.
I think I'm probably making a wrong decision. My honorable mention is Henry Fonda, but I chose Claudia Cardinale, and we didn't talk very much about her, but I thought she was tremendous in this film.
Yeah, why are you always... Yeah, well, anyway, my favorite actor is Claudia Cardinale, but I still insist that you're wrong.
All right. Well, I want to hear about that.
So if she's your favorite actor, why did we talk about her so little? It feels like we just kind of glossed
past her. I think – no, you're right. That's a good point. I think – I guess I don't have a good reason for that.
I thought she was really good.
Was really good, but everybody else was in a different – more inferior movie. And so we didn't get a chance to talk about her.
Okay.
Okay. Roy, let's talk questions now. Do you have any questions left over?
No sense.
I don't have any unanswered questions.
Mark, any other questions?
No, we addressed the one I had. Like, why didn't Murphy uncuff himself if he had all the damn keys? Like, I don't get that.
Okay.
I guess it didn't serve the story, so whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, I have two questions. And I think I asked this before, but I don't think we have an answer to this. But when Harmonica traded in Cheyenne for the $5,000 bounty, and then Cheyenne just shows up later in the movie, how did Cheyenne get away from the authorities?
Well, we're kind of given an answer.
His gang?
There was a shootout.
Oh, okay.
This is
where the shootout was. I was kind of thinking the shootout was when they were attacking Frank's train again.
I thought so, too. I thought he was killed by Morton at the train.
Yeah.
Was he? Oh, shoot. Did I miss that?
I don't remember seeing him escape.
That's true.
But the thing is, it makes sense because Cheyenne has like 70 extremely expendable men.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, he Yeah, I might put Cheyenne as my villain because I don't think he has. You don't want the health benefits of Cheyenne's organization. I don't think. Okay, my other question is: at the end of Murphy's Law, does Murphy go to prison?
Yes,
he has
like,
to.
Because when the cops show up and there's just like dead bodies everywhere, right? Like
he broke so many laws,
and he killed several of them. So
he kills Frank, like just for no reason. But they can't prove that. Here's the thing: he would go to. It depends on how far that orgy of evidence that Joan kept goes. Like if they find that photo album where she is targeting all of these people, then he might have a shot, but she can't testify because she's dead.
She's a little
dead. Well, she did kill the therapist, so there's the connection right there. Like,
yeah,
it's easy to get Joan Crawford for what she did, but even then, like he did go to the penthouse and torture mafia guy, and then he did kill all these people, and he did have someone hostage, and that hostage now has an arrow in the back. So even though he did save her, so like I mean you can't cancel the good with the bad. Like he still acted like a vigilante, so he has to spend some time in prison.
Yeah, he might get some time. Well, yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, I don't know if they can trust Arabella's testimony, like if she vouches for him, because they might chalk it up to like Stockholm syndrome or something.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, if this goes to court, I'd love to see what the stenographer does with her testimony. That would be nuts. Anyway.
Okay, let me change the order around just a little bit from what I have. Okay, Roy, do you have a best titular line?
I do, and actually it's just the lyrics of a song, John.
Okay, this is mine. I wasn't sure.
Sure out to get ya.
Okay.
I thought I was going to be the only one.
Okay, so you too. Okay, all three of us picked the song Murphy's Law. I have a few more. Let's see. I have Murphy's Law, it could happen to you. Murphy's Law, you better know what to do. Murphy said if anything could possibly go wrong, it will. Yeah! You may be down and out. Anyway, it goes on.
Yeah.
Great song.
Oh my god. I'm sure it's great, but it's brilliant.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, do you have a favorite quote?
Harmonica says, I saw three of these dusters a short time ago. They were waiting for a train. Inside the dusters were three men. And Cheyenne says, so? And then he says, inside the men there were three bullets. That was just so brilliant.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's good.
I'm like, ooh, we're gonna get to see him clean house.
Yeah, the circumstances of his death were very curious. He fell down an elevator shaft onto some bullets.
Onto some bullets. Yeah, some bullets.
Roy, best quote.
So honorable mention I have, did you bring a horse for me? Mm. Well, it looks like we're shy one horse. Oh. Wrong. You brought two too many. So that's pretty good.
That's good.
So I'm going to get a little PG here, and don't you tell my wife. But my favorite quote is, the reward for this man is $5,000. Is that right? And Cheyenne says, Judas was content for $4,970 less. And Harmonica says, there were no dollars in them days. And Cheyenne says, but sons of bitches? Yeah.
Okay. My favorite quote is, well, I couldn't decide between these two. But it's when he says, to Christina in Red Sun, he says, you cook, you eat. I cook, you get whipped. And also when Arabella says, does a pope shit in the woods? Roy, let's do your taglines. Are you ready?
Sure. So my favorite was from Once Upon a Time in the West. There were three men in her life, one to take her, one to love her, and one to kill her. And now we have to just really quickly, can we discuss this?
Okay, yes.
I think Frake's the one who wants to kill her, but also he loved her and he definitely took her.
So Frank's all three.
Is Frank all three?
Because
who's supposed to be who.
Because the one who loves her was her husband, right? But he's not one of the main three guys.
He's not one of the three men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I fixed it.
Okay.
There were three men in her life, one to kill her, one to drink her coffee, and one to mostly ignore her.
Good. Okay.
Nice.
That's good.
Nice.
Oh, Red Sun, the greatest samurai hinders the West has ever known. And Murphy's Law, he's a dinosaur doken, dork, and she's a pepperoni breath. Together they're hopefully not having a sex scene.
Okay. Very nice. Okay, Mark, what's your favorite tagline and your new taglines?
My favorite is everything Roy just did, because that was brilliant. Yeah. My favorite tagline is, there were three men in her life, one to take her, one to love her, one to kill her. And that's just, that's not the movie, but it's still fantastic. I came up with lame alternate taglines, but Once Upon a Time in the West, harmonica revenge is best served in the West. Ooh. Red Sun, it's Shanghai Noon with no budget. Murphy's Law, testosterone and guns because women are a distraction.
I like them all. Those are really good. Okay, well, my favorite tagline is not the one you guys chose, because as you pointed out, it doesn't make sense. So yeah. Disqualified. So I have to go with the first East meets West Western for Red Sun. But on the – and I know this is against the rules, but off of the posters, Roy, I would have voted for the Murphy's Law tagline that is, they set him up, he takes them down.
We should give a shout out to Mr. Majestic, right?
Yeah.
That tagline, that's like, he just wanted to be left alone until they pushed him too far. That's
good stuff.
Yeah. I'm afraid to revisit that movie because I'm afraid that it's going to be a Murphy's Law situation. I remember liking it, but I'm not too sure I will anymore.
All right. My Once Upon a Time in the West tagline is, when you hear that harmonica, brother, you better hop that train. Then nice. My Red Sun tagline, USA, Japan, France, who will win? Well, not the Comanches. And Murphy's Law, he may be a snot-licking donkey fart, but that won't stop him from cleaning house. All right, so those all are right. All the awards. Now, some special awards. I'm going to miss some of these. Okay. Do we have the Bronsonist award? Is that one of the awards?
The most Bronson Bronson? I went with him playing Link in Red Sun, and I know Mark kind of has some objection to that, but I felt like the Bronson voice was on full display in Red Sun.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, what would you say is the Bronsonist?
Of these three movies, it has to be harmonica. Because Murphy's Law, like, he's basically just phoning it in, and he's not being really too Bronson-y. And in Red Sun, he's playing the fool a lot, and that's so not Charles Bronson. But Once Upon a Time in the West, he's a stone cold killer. That's Bronson. That's him.
Yeah. Man. Well, I mean, I don't know very much about Bronson, but I know what I was expecting from Bronson, and Murphy's Law delivered the Bronson for me.
Oh, like lazy Bronson. He's like, all right.
Yeah.
Like sleepy.
I guess I'll kill somebody. How about I just blow up a car? Y'all okay with that?
Okay. What was the cleanest house?
Okay. So I'm going with and I was thinking of a movie, but I decided to whittle it down to a scene, and I'm going with the Train Station 3. I mean, he killed three people in about a half a second. It was.
Good clean house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark, what would you say the movie or the moment that had the cleanest house?
The movie or the scene?
Either one.
The movie. I thought it was Once Upon a Time in the West. Like I thought, like, oh, he definitely cleaned the most house here. So, but Nerd Roy says that it happened in
Red Sun. Yeah, it's like twice as much in Red Sun. Yeah,
I just didn't feel that. Anyway, so I thought for me it was Once Upon a Time in the West, and the scene same as Roy. Like after 10 minutes of quiet and nobody talks, you have harmonica blow people away. Like, that's just a brilliant start to a movie that's supposed to have the most cleaning of the house.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go Murphy's Law, and if I have to pick a scene, it's cleaning the Bradbury building house.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
it's really great.
Yeah. Okay, and finally, the best insult. Probably said by, what's her name? Arabella.
Arabella.
Yeah. Mark, do you have a good insult?
I mean, you can't go wrong with vomit breath. I mean, she says it like about five different times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dinosaur dork, she says it like three different times. So I can't decide which one's the best.
Some of them are like, you know, kind of crude teen insults. But then she says things like dinosaur dork, and I'm like, is she six?
Yeah, that's like a five-year-old thing.
Yeah, some.
And she says other things, like there's some really funny ones, but like this is a PG show, so I won't get into that. But some of those are like, no way, she just said that. Like, that's just so stupid.
I think I didn't see any evidence of this. I mean, it really seemed like none of those were scripted. I kind of feel like,
I think they were.
Just go for it.
I felt like they're just like, okay, listen, you're a pop singer. You know, you think of stuff off the fly. Yeah.
So I went with butt crust.
I went with butt crust. Oh, I can't believe it.
I forgot about butt crust.
But I will say, from Red Sun, Ursula Andress says, "You are a disgrace to your mothers who are pigs." And I thought that was pretty good.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Some of the ones we didn't mention, of course, jism breath.
I was gonna go there, but I thought we were PG.
Oh, well, we are, but you know.
John likes to be gross. PG.
Right. Yeah, these are scientific terms. kiss my pantyhose, sperm bank. You know, just pubic hair. That's it.
Just,
and of course, Airwolf is a good one.
Airwolf is an insult. It's the best. Mm.
Okay, so I think, are there any other special awards?
I don't think so.
Going long here. Sorry. Okay. All right. Mark, let's hear your number three movie.
I'm going to have to go with Murphy's Law, as much as that hurts me.
I saw that.
That's going to be my third. Yeah, it's going to be number three.
Okay. Roy?
Murphy's Law.
All right.
It could happen to you.
Look, you guys, I know you guys are several time zones away, but I'm going to have to go with Once Upon a Time in the West.
That was the most predictable thing that could possibly have happened in this podcast.
I felt like I buttered you up a little bit, right? By some of my low-key comments. Okay, the thing is, you know, what you read about it is like, oh my gosh, Dario Argento wrote this? You know, how's it going to be? And then you kind of read about it. Sergio Leone, he like wanted to get out of the Westerns, but they're like, here, let's do one more Western. Let's get this guy. Clint Eastwood's not coming back, so we're going to get Charles Bronson instead, and Henry Fonda's assigned to this. And I felt like the movie to me felt like it was just that, which is what it was, which was an assignment. And it seemed so much like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but I couldn't really make sense of the puzzle pieces of these characters as they went along. Like, they could have killed each other like throughout the whole movie, but it's like they knew they were in a movie. They knew they had to build to something. They knew they had to get to a certain scene later. And I kind of couldn't get into their individual motivations. Like, Cheyenne is just like hanging out, just watching all his guys get killed. You know, it just didn't fit together for me. And, and it was long, but it did go by. I respect it, but I didn't love it. So, sorry. Right. I just had to get that through. All right. My movie two, of course, is Red Sun, another Western starring Charles Bronson and Toshirô Mifune. And I liked how he spoke a lot more in Red Sun. I didn't like the Comanche part.
You don't like Westerns, do you?
Roy?
Really?
I think that's a theme that... I'm trying to think of a Western we've watched where you're like, I really dug that. And
The Good, the Bad, the Ugly.
Stagecoach.
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I loved it. Loved it.
So
have you guys covered Tombstone yet?
We haven't. No, we haven't.
Oh, Tombstone. God.
Nor have we done Unforgiven, which I've never seen.
I think it's overrated.
My number two is Red Sun. So at least I think we're all going to agree on our number two at least.
Yes, Red Sun is number two for me.
In defense of Once Upon a Time in the West, which I thought was a beautiful film, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I would say that I know that Harmonica hadn't had opportunities to kill Frank or to let someone else kill him, but I think that there's, I don't know if it's misguided, but there's just this principle of it has to happen the right way. And I didn't feel like John did that it was, they had, just because there was like an appointment at the end of the script. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a classic film. I kind of want to watch it again, even though it's almost 3 hours long. And I think of all three of these, even though Red Sun feels the most like Bronson, I thought that his performance in Once Upon a Time in the West was by far better than the other two.
Probably.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in the West is iconic. It's one of the great Westerns. I completely disagree that this was just an assignment. I mean, just in the framing of scenes alone, Sergio Leone put in so much passion and skill. When the showdown happens and you have the close-up of Harmonica's eyes and Frank's eyes, you feel that you're part of the showdown, that you're in it. It's just so perfectly directed. And I do think it does make sense. You know what? Harmonica is Kuroba because he wants revenge. He doesn't want anybody to take out Frank. He knows that there's a time when they're going to face off against each other and he will get his revenge, just like Kuroba. Like, it was meant for – he wasn't going to have anybody else kill him. He had to create the situation where he was going to isolate him, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, and I thought that the performances were incredible. And I think – I mean, this is just kind of a hot take right now, but I think I might like this better than The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I do.
If we're comparing them.
I do. I definitely do.
For the performances?
Yeah.
For everything. I think I just enjoyed this movie more than The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I'm in agreement. I actually rate this higher than The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I guess there's no way I can – because it is just a matter of like somehow the thing that I loved about The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is just how interconnected the three people were. And I think seeing that movie first and knowing this movie came out after that, it, like, I don't know how I could but feel that they're trying to replicate something that they did in the first movie, you know?
Possible, but I don't think I get as hung up on that as you do. So, but it's okay because we all have opinions and sometimes they're wrong.
I agree to that doubly.
Very wrong.
Now, okay. But I mean, one thing, of course, the elephant in the room here is that Murphy's Law is exactly what I expected, and it delivered. And when I think of Bronson, and you know, this might be, you might be right. Maybe I hate Westerns. I don't think I do, but one thing I can tell you for sure, when I think of Charles Bronson and I think of him in his element, I think of him wearing a polyester suit, shooting crooks in alleys. And that's what I got. And that's what I got with Murphy's Law, and it's his law, and all hail Jack Murphy. And way to go, Bronson, in 1987 right, or whenever it was.
Anyway, that was a pleasure. I'm so glad we got to watch the Charles Bronson movies. That makes me really happy. And there's so many Charles Bronson movies that I still am kind of dying to see some of the other ones that I'm either going to explore them on my own or we'll see what happens next April. It'll have an opportunity. So we have anything else? Or are we ready to bring on Richard for future business?
Future business time. Richard Templeman is joining us in 2 weeks. So let's try to get him on here, and my Skype window is doing that thing that it does.
Add participants.
Richard.
Hello, Richard.
Hey, man.
Hello, how are you?
Hello, Richard.
Great. Doing great, buddy. It's weird to hear you talk, because we've known you for years through the internet, but we've never spoken, like, and so this is weird, and it's great. So thank you for joining the Skype call. Hope we didn't catch you at a bad time.
No, it's a great time.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, you're looking good. We turned off our cameras because we don't like the way we look, but you look great.
We look
great. Thank you. Jealous of your hair, bro.
Okay. So anyway, so you're going to join us. The plan is to join us in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today, hopefully. By the way, I have to talk to you guys. I can't do it on Thursday, so we'll have to come up with another day that week. Hopefully we can work something out. And we're hoping you can get 3 movies for us. Three movies that made you, three movies that you want to talk about. And since we don't know you, I feel like they could be anything. Do you have three in mind for us?
Yes, I do. And my inspiration actually is a childhood icon of mine.
Okay.
So it just was Judy Garland's 100th birthday.
Whoa.
If she were still alive.
My goodness. Ooh.
So we're going on a little Judy binge.
Judy binge.
That's okay. Sweet. Yeah, Judy binge.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. Oh, that's brilliant. I love that.
Mwah. Here we go. Drum roll, please. So I was going to do the classic Wizard of Oz, but I figure we've already seen that. So let's do the other Judy Garland movie from 1939, Babes in Arms.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Okay.
Never even heard of that
so
one.
So if you mean we by this podcast, we have not done The Wizard of Oz, but Babes in Arms sounds great.
Yeah. By we, I mean everyone humans. In the world, humans. Okay. Yes,
do you know,
yes,
it was
yes.
at the, it was at movie theaters on Monday, and every single time it comes back for like a 1 billionth anniversary or whatever reason, I always can't see it, and it's driving me crazy. But anyway.
I agree. I always want to see it in theaters. I saw it once at a drive-in movie theater, and that was pretty epic.
Mm.
Okay.
So, yes, we can extra credit if you want to watch Wizard of Oz, that's fine. But we all know what that movie is. But Babes in Arms, 1939, Judy Garland, right before Wizard of Oz came out.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. No idea what this even is. Is it about children going to World War I?
There's elements of the war. There's elements of children. But they're not necessarily the ones going to war.
Okay.
That's the worst Venn diagram ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got it. Yeah. Based on the title, you got a good idea, but just a little different.
Cool. Okay. What's the next one?
Movie number two was Judy's big comeback in 1954 called A Star is Born.
Okay. I was hoping that would be one
of them.
Brilliant. Okay. I've never seen, I saw the new one, but I haven't seen any other version of A Star is Born. So this will put us at the halfway mark.
Did you say that was 1959?
That was 1954.
1954, A Star is Born. I hear it's great. I haven't seen it.
Yes, okay. Yes. I did also watch the Lady Gaga version. So
nice.
That one broke me.
I know. Well, it's the same. It's going to be, spoiler alert, it's going to be the same plot, but just different actors, different time periods. But, you know, adaptions.
Yeah. Well, A Star is Born, it's acting, though, right? The 1954 one was acting, not singing.
Yeah, it switched in the 70s with the Barbra Streisand version to be singing.
Did you see the Barbra Streisand version?
I missed that one. It was R, and as we know, as a child, I could not watch R-rated movies.
Fair enough. I hear it's like it's not very well-regarded, but I'm curious about it.
No, I liked it.
Did you like it, Mark? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, Kris Kristofferson's really good in it.
Hmm, okay. Well, that could be another extra credit.
Extra credit. Watch all the versions of A Star is Born.
Cool.
All right. And then to wrap it all up, I think this was like either her final big film, you know, presence or one of the best final films she did. This is I Could Go On Singing 1963.
I Could Go On Singing. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I could go on.
So we span the whole career.
Wow, the 30s, the 50s, and the 60s. That's awesome.
Wow, okay. So yeah, this is going to be crazy. Okay, so we're watching those three movies next time. And then after that, the 21st Century Musicals category one. So we're going to be...
That's going to be awesome.
How to put this? We're going to just be... Yeah, we're just going to be on Broadway, right? For the next month.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They will give us an equity card the minute we finish all those podcasts.
Oh, wow. I might actually learn to carry a tune after all this. Okay.
After all this, you'll be able to write a musical based on Murphy's Law of the Song.
Oh, that would be great.
By the way, Richard, you're going to get to pick one of those 21st century musicals. There'll be the poll on the website. We'll pick one, and you will pick one, and then I will pick one.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Okay. So start thinking. So think about 21st century musicals. Okay, so that's coming up. So think about 21st century musicals, and that will be after July 1st. So this coming in 2 weeks. We're talking to Richard about the Judy Garland binge. And then the week after that, we're watching detective movies live at the live event in Salt Lake at the Post Theater, starting at 10 a.m. And then we're just going to be there all day. We're going to finish at like 9 p.m. So that'll be great. And then the week after that, we're talking 21st century musicals. TBA. We don't have those in mind just yet. Okay.
And Richard, you are coming to Salt Lake City, correct?
Absolutely.
Oh, are you really? Wow. That's awesome. That's going to be great. I hope you have some other friends to visit while you're here, because we can't guarantee a super spectacular time.
No, I understand. Yeah. You know, we all have our roots in the Salt Lake area.
Good. Okay. Roy, do we have any other business to take care of after that, or is that it?
So normally we would like start thinking of categories to be voted on, but after we've had our time with Richard, we will then be seeing Ammon for the second time. Ammon, who's definitely not listening to this podcast, please start thinking of three movies that you've never seen before, and I'm pretty sure we're going to get a weird selection of films.
Or not. Maybe Ammon. They're the least weird selection of films he's ever told us to watch because he doesn't have experience with them.
Since it's three movies he's never seen, he's just going to like do the three Avengers films. Yeah. That's what he's going to pick.
He's going to pick like the third Transformers sequel. He's like, well, I know I've never seen this. Yeah. Okay, so that's coming up. So we got that. So that is future business. Do we have anything else to worry about?
I don't think so, other than I'm really excited. I love how it's crazy, the swing, right? Because we just watched three Charles Bronson movies, and now we're watching three Judy Garland movies, and I love that. I love it to death.
Testosterone swing is getting too much to handle.
We're spanning the whole of human existence.
So wonderful picks. I can't wait to start watching them, and so we'll get going on that this week.
Thanks for that, Richard. Thanks for making time today. Hang on the line, because we're finishing up the recording this week, like right now. So hang on the line and listen to us say goodbye, I suppose. We did not do contact information. Go ahead and email us at yoursmindtheirspodcast@gmail.com. Also, find us on Facebook. Just do a search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs. That's the place where you do all the polls. That's where the democracy happens. Sorry it's through Facebook, but, you know, hey, that's what we got. Go to the blog, yoursmindtheirspodcast.blogspot.com. You can download any of the other shows that we've done. It's a lot of fun. And go ahead and go to either iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever it's called, and give us 5 stars. That's the most important thing. We also have a phone number, 801-896-4542, 801-896-4542. If you call that number, leave us a voicemail, and we will play that voicemail, or at least the clean, non-obscene parts.
We will definitely play it. So you're wondering how you can break into showbiz, and us playing your voicemail is step number one.
Yep.
While we've got Mark and Richard here, if either of you two would like to quickly plug any podcast that you guys are working on, here's your space.
Yeah.
Back a million years ago when John and Roy, just back in the day when you started JR watching Star Trek for the first time, it caused me to want to do my own Star Trek podcast, which is basically copying your format but doing it a little differently.
Nice.
So it's called Turning Trekkie, the podcast, where I am the one that has seen it before. My friend Crystal has not. And it's basically that idea, but, you know, we jazz it up. It's not the same content as you, but it's like a springboard or spinoff of your podcast.
Nice.
So I'll plug that.
With jazz. Awesome. So are you in the midst of some old jazz. Star Trek right now? Or are you like us with new stuff?
Yeah, we're still in the original series, season 3 right now.
Oh, wonderful. I would love to revisit the original series at some point. By the way, Richard, Mark, sorry to – yeah, but Richard, what do you think of Strange New Worlds?
Love it.
Yeah, I think we all like it so far.
Yeah, no, which is unusual because, Richard, you're really good at like really being enthused about new Star Trek, and I think you've been really good like with us in being patient with us, you know, as we've been just really like mean and bitter about new Star Trek, but it's really nice to like Strange New World, so that's good.
Yeah, I think they listened to the fans, and that was good.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, do you have anything to plug?
Well, first of all, new Star Trek is brilliant, guys, and I hope y'all are watching Picard also as well.
Well, we did.
We did. We did. It's no right. Once Upon a Time in the West, of course, but.
Well, of course not, but still, like, oh my God, really, guys? Okay, I'm slightly disappointed. Anyway, so I'm not on any podcast right now, but I am going to plug my friends that I love so very much at Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye. Y'all give them a listen. They're covering Disney movies right now, and all their opinions are wrong. That's what makes it so brilliant. they're so wrong about everything, but I love them so much, and I hope you guys give them a listen.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Of course.
Yeah, totally, totally. Okay, so yeah, so we've they've been around before, you know, good friends of ours. Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye. I couldn't agree with you more that I disagree with them so much.
Well, John and I have participated in roughly 0.2% of those podcasts.
Yeah. Yes. Brilliant every time.
Oh yeah,
it's good fun. Okay, so and also of course everybody, just one last plug: Post Theater, July 1st. It's a Friday. We're watching a bunch of movies, then we're recording. You can wander in probably any time during the day. Don't bring any popcorn because they don't allow it in the theater. So, yeah. Yep. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Richard. I think it's time to say goodbye, even though I don't want to. But, yeah.
Close the
curtain
to.
On Bronson. So.
Yeah.
All right. I'll keep it musical, guys. Come on.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure, Mark. Thanks for these last 4 weeks and these two wonderful podcasts. And Richard, we can't wait.
Yep.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, both of you, for listening again. And we will see you in 2 weeks.
We don't only listen, we also participate.
'Kay. Oh, do you think it's possible that like all three of us could do the entire podcast just trying to talk like Charles Bronson?
Do you want to go for it? I mean,
I'm here to summarize Once Upon a Time in the West.
I don't know how long I can hold it, and I think by the end I'm going to sound like something completely unidentifiable.
I'm just plugging my nose and speaking like, bleh, 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 bleh. Okay.
Hi, I'm Roy.
I don't have a harmonica to do that.
It switches.
You know what? For my introduction, I was just going to play my harmonica, and I couldn't find it.
Dude, seriously, because I was going to do the same thing. I don't know what my daughter did with my harmonica.
Dang it.
I thought ahead. I ransacked both your homes because I knew you'd both do that. Ah. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Are you ready?
I should have gone to a dollar store. Uh-huh. Anyway, all right, whatever.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, a podcast about movies.